It's time for Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here! Yes! Let us make them remember. We are not afraid!
If we wanted to have a Declare Your Independence episode at Porkfest here in Lancaster, New Hampshire, up near the Canadian border, it would have to be one with Jay Noon. You know, we just got to, you know, if we're not checking in with Jay, you know, we're not knowing what's up here, certainly in New Hampshire. And from his perspective as a vendor, you know, he was doing food, man. He had him some butchered pigs and cows and selling the meat, selling the prepared, the unprepared, the raw, the frozen, the whatever. You know, he had a business. You know, we got it. I didn't know the butcher. This is one thing that, you know, I remember as a kid. You didn't have the supermarket was not where you went to get your meat. You know, when I was a kid, I remember you went to the grocery store, then you went to the butcher, right. You know, and you would have the bones for your dogs and the soup, this and the piece of that. And the, you know, the low cost, whatever you had to get liver. Every Thursday was liver, you know, like, yeah. And then, but then you get custom cuts of whatever the heck it was you wanted. And you make an order the week before, you call. I mean, it was the butcher was a separate trip. And now with all the meat shortage and the kind of the central collection of supermarkets, this is where you get everything, and again, this is where you get nothing. So if you get everything somewhere, it could be where you get nothing somewhere, you know. So when this whole COVID thing happened and the shutdowns and the animal killings and bulldozing in the ground kind of crap, this is freaking, you know, depression stupid stuff they're doing, trying to influence prices and people. It's just dumb. As a kid I'm like, how in the hell, why did they do that? How did they get away with that?
Well, they claim,
sit here and watch it.
They claim a few different elements when they're like euthanizing all these pigs. And one of them is market protection. They don't want to, you know, they want to kill the pigs. So they're not in, it's kind of like cash for clunkers. You know, the car comes in and they put a chemical in the engine and make the engine so it has no good parts in it. So it like seizes up. That they did like
during the Obama administration.
Yeah.
Like you have $500 for cash for clunker, and you bring in anything they gave you, I don't know, a lot of money for you.
$500, I think it was, they gave you basically for a junk car or a car that, whatever. It was minimum $4,500.
That was so stupid.
Yep.
So stupid. They don't talk about that
anymore. Right. So that was market protectionism, was what that was to protect the, you know, the auto industry. And not even really the auto industry. So they've been building too many cars, but back to the animals, it's sort of the same thing. So, you know, we talked about this several times on the show, but, you know, my partner, Neil Smith, and I, we were going to go pick up 100 hogs, like, you know, early May 2020. And not 100 hogs. We're going to go buy a trailer load of hogs. Market-ready hogs, like 350 pounds. A guy said $100 a piece, and they were in Pennsylvania. Well, it cost you $500. You know, that's $500 worth of feed they probably put through those hogs. So we're ready to go down there and buy them, and the guy goes, I can't sell them to you. I have to euthanize them. So he had a barn that had 4,000 hogs that he had to gas. And he said, I can't sell them to you. He goes, I'll be in violation of, you know, my contract with Tyson. I won't get the insurance money. And, you know, and Tyson would rather the insurance pay him than Tyson have to pay him. And then, you know, the competition meat is not in the food chain, because when you have basically, you know, 10,000 guys like me doing what I'm doing, it really puts a damper in all this corporate, you know, food supply.
Yeah, we're not going to give you ready-made, breedable, slaughterable hogs.
Right.
That would like muck up our crap, man.
And so anyways, the guy had to euthanize them all. And this is the problem when you have, you know, such centralized and government subsidized food production as we have now. And like, a lot of like the earthy crunchies that are all about organic food, a lot of them are leftists and they like government. They like the idea that government's, you know, taking care of things. And I say to them, so you're okay with government food subsidies? Oh, yeah, that's wonderful. And I says, well, as a farmer, the only way you can get a government subsidized crop is if you use Monsanto growing practices. And they're like, oh, well, Monsanto, that's evil. And then I like to tell them that Bill Gates was like basically the number one financial backer of Monsanto and is a huge part of Monsanto. And, you know, most of the lefties think Bill Gates is okay, too. But the food conscious lefties, once it's explained to them just a little bit, they start to understand that, you know, what government is doing with the food is really bad. And this is all control mechanism. It's always about control, control, control. Control the masses, and the way to control the masses is the food supply. You were talking about how when you were a kid, you know, you went to the grocery store and then you went to the butcher. So, you know, I was born in 79. My grandfather.
Oh my God, I graduated high school in 79.
Right, right. So my grandfather, my step grandfather lived in, you know, Palmer, Massachusetts his entire life. He was born there and he's still alive. But he told me, you know, when, I was a teenager, and he's like, oh, well, that place used to be Fred's Butcher Shop, he said. And he was telling me that when he was a kid, he used to walk to Fred's Butcher Shop because Fred was a Polish whatever, and he said they used to go buy live chickens. Now, they just lived in a house in town. And they had a little garden, but he said they used to buy live chickens. I mean, this was probably, in the 50s, I'm not sure. But he used to buy live chickens, and him and his sister used to, you know, have a wagon, and they would walk the live chickens from the guy, the farm that they go, you know, a quarter mile up the road, they go buy six or seven chickens, and the deal was you got the chickens cheap if you sent your kids in there to go catch them. So the kids would go catch the chickens, and then they would just take the chickens in the wagon and some crates, and they would walk it down to Fred's. And Fred's Butcher Shop, and Fred would butcher the chicken. Well, there was an Italian butchery and a Portuguese butchery in town also. So sometimes they would take the chicken or the pig, and they would, you know, to try something different, they would bring it to the Italian butcher or the Portuguese butcher because they just do all kinds of different stuff than what the Polish butcher does. And they were Polish. But that was pretty cool that, like, in Palmer, Massachusetts, this, you know, little mill town that you had, you know, something like, and I did a little research on it, but there was basically something like 28 registered slaughterhouses, butcher shops within Palmer, Massachusetts, the little town I grew up in like 1954. And in 2001, well, I might have been 98, actually, because I was a year graduated high school. I did some work on this. But in 98, I think that there was one registered butcher shop. And that was promptly out of business, basically when the old lady died. And I do remember bringing her chickens, and she'd butcher you, like, you bring her like 15 chickens, and it would be like $2.30 a chicken, and you got them all back, you know, wrapped up in, you know, plastic and sort of shrink wrapped.
Well, what you've done is you saw that. I'll just blaze through this so that people know in the context of what we're talking about. When COVID really started getting the lockdown and closing restaurants, all of them, you know, and they were starting to shut down the food supply chain, and they're doing all this, well, we can't, the restaurants are closed, we're not selling the hogs, people aren't buying them, and all of a sudden, what do we do with these animals? We can't keep feeding them, it costs us money. We got, you know, the insurance claims and contracts are tight, you know, that kind of crap. And Jay is like, well, I'll buy them, you know, I get cheap. You know, it's going to be a food thing. It's always a food thing. And, but you did, we're able, as you went around all New England, we're able to buy some piglets. People had some different stuff. So you did buy them. You got the trailers to get them. You got the trucks to pull the trailers. You got the land to put them on. You got the knowledge of whatever. So Jay was the man. He could see what was coming.
Yeah.
So he did that. And then there's Bardo Farms, your partner, Neil, he's got some land. So they had long-term plan of, we need to get these animals. We need to feed them. We need to raise them. We need to slaughter them. We need to have the meat available. We got to get freezers. And then we can't get butcher dates. So hell, we got to be our own butcher. Then we got to have a refrigerated truck. I mean, all of a sudden, this is going right back to the way it was when I was a kid.
Right.
You know, this is back in the way, you know, there was a local guy that did, well, of course, the stroke dash, you know, special form permit of the man kind of crap. And I don't know what that is, and I'm not sure you care, you know.
I'd like to get into that just a little bit of what happened so people know what to watch out for.
Okay, no, we'll get to that. So I just want people to understand, as I'm watching this happen here in New Hampshire, because we know a lot of people, we know Jay, of course, and we're working on the bus, and I'm here, and I'm thinking, they're going to be fine. Jay's family and friends, the Free State Project, they know that a lot of people were buying these piglets to have one, two, three, four on their little few acre, or whatever they got, reason they moved here. They got a little bit of land. They go, yep, we did this for a rainy day so that we can, it's raining. So we're, you know, it's time to start making food. So they expand their garden. They start having their meat. Now you got to butcher it. Now the butcher dates are stacked up for a freaking year. You can't get a place. You got to do it yourself. So this has been, when you come up to Pork Fest last year and this year, I don't know if you want to give out numbers, but
yeah,
I mean, you are giving out, I mean, you're liquidating a crap load of meat. Mm-hmm. You know, what kind of numbers are we looking at?
So what I did is I brought, I screwed the numbers up. So at Pork Fest, I'm like, yeah, I brought 9 pigs and 1 cow worth of meat, which is actually wrong. So I basically brought 4 pigs worth of meat, or 4.5 pigs worth of meat. The reason I said 9 is because we used a USDA butcher, a slaughterhouse in Athol, Massachusetts, called Adams Farm. And I just had boxes from 9 different pigs. But what I did is, you know, I can't sell like...
You can sit and hang out if you want. I don't care.
I got shoulders and big roasts and stuff that don't really work well here. So what I wanted to sell here was pork chops, country-style ribs, sausage links, and loose sausage. Because I'm like, when I get done with you, I'm going to start making the tacos that I've been making ever since I got married here. I'm going to start cooking them up again. So anyways, the biggest thing with me is I wanted to source all the ingredients to be as close to home and as like healthy as possible. So I ended up bringing meat from 9 different pigs, but it was basically the equivalent of like 4 pigs worth of meat. So, and I sort of had everything custom butchered for Pork Fest. You see the sausage links that I make up. Those things cost us like $2 a pound extra just to get linked. And the reason, and at the slaughter, well, labor crisis. And so the slaughterhouse I've been going to is in Massachusetts. They're like 10 minutes south of the Massachusetts, New Hampshire line. One of them I've been using. The other one's in Vermont. And then we have a local guy that we use too, but he can only do like 2 pigs a weekend or 1 cow. So they're like, when we first brought pigs to them last year, they had our pigs done and everything in 2 weeks. They called us up. All right, here you go. All your smoked meat's done. Everything's done. The last round, I was a little worried because we're like, hey, we need to meet, you know, because I'm coming to Pork Fest. And they're like, oh, okay. And we're working on it. We're working on it. We're working on it. We don't know. And I show up there and there's like everybody that's helping me out is like new at the slaughterhouse. They're all new guys. And I've been, you know, I go to the slaughterhouse, you know, basically 2 to 3 times a month for the past year. You know, we're bringing in pigs or cows, and then we got to show up, you know, another week and pick up the meat from the round I brought in, you know, a month ago or 6 weeks ago. But basically their backlog is like 6 to 8 weeks now on like pigs. And it usually is around 2 weeks. And it's just because they can't find the help. And last time I was there, they just got to train a lot of kids. And it's a lot of kids that, like, you know, they're wearing Trump hats. And, like, one kid's like, yeah, I ain't taking no welfare. I'm just, you know, getting a job. This is the third job I've had, and they're just paying me more, so I'm coming here. And basically, the slaughterhouse had to pretty much double up their wages on everybody just to get people to show up. You know, they were paying, like, $12 bucks an hour 2 years ago. Now it's like they're starting kids at $21 an hour just to get them there. So going going and doing this, I was very fortunate that as essentially sitting in the hospital after the C-section last year, and I'm talking with Neil about going in on some pigs, and I'm like, hey, Neil, they said they would give me a 10 pig butcher spot a month for the right through for until whatever it was, April of 2021. And this was February of 2020. I'm talking to these guys at the slaughterhouse. Now the guy who owns a slaughterhouse, he just knows a bunch of guys I know, and I have a very good reputation with him. He knew my grandfather, his father, my grandfather, did business, 50 years ago. And so that really helped. Just knowing people really helps. And so I was able to book these 10 spots, which was really good, because they're shortly on, 3 weeks later on our website, they're like, we are totally booked on all pig and cow and lamb until, and we're not booking 2022. And this was, this was 2020. Yeah.
2020.
Yeah, and they're like, we'll start booking 2022. I don't remember. But anyways, so the USDA slaughterhouse is just they do a good job. They it's expensive. It's cost you about $2 a pound to get that meat processed. So what I did is I brought up here sausage links, breakfast sausage, sweet Italian sausage, loose and link, hot Italian sausage links, and I've just been grilling them and selling them, and pork chops and country style ribs,
bacon,
lots of bacon. So I sold.
He's selling a slice of bacon. Everybody's sitting there, oh, the bacon, yeah, that's a dollar.
Yeah,
dollar slice.
And everybody's like, sweet man, sweet.
Yeah, boom. And then that's exactly what I want—a dollar bacon.
And so the crypto
pull it right off the grill.
The cryptocurrency I'm looking to gather up is Monero. I like Monero, and I never really got paid in Monero. And I'm like, all right, bacon's a dollar a slice and 75 cents a slice if you want to pay in Monero. Now, the bacon packages that we get are about 1 pound, and we sell them for $12 a piece. A lot, and if somebody buys a bunch of meat off me, like a whole box of meat, I'll give them a wholesale discount. I'll knock off $2 a pound across the board.
Yeah, you are not cheaper. That is for damn
sure. No, we're 300% higher than the grocery store. But if you take, so we are expensive, but it costs a lot. It's a lot of work. And I'm not going to compete with government subsidized, Monsanto food feeding 4,000 head. I don't care. I'm not doing that. And people respect that. A lot of people don't have a problem, paying the higher money for the stuff that,
the thing is, I'll give you this. You have a quality material, and what happens is it's more nutritious. You have less problems. You don't need to eat as much. You feel like you had a real meal. I mean, it's just you start going back to quality, and I would do it simply to support the Agora and you and the cost. Whatever. I'll eat less but when you start really getting into it, it's higher quality. It's cheaper. Mm-hmm. You're not having other problems. You're getting more quality meat. You're enjoying the meal more. And just aside from the actual satiation of your body and so on, it's a satiation of my spirit.
Yeah.
I mean, there's so many other benefits that, and what you are doing, it may cost more, but it's there.
Yeah.
Yes. And that's what's coming. It ain't going to be there. So you better get your pirate mind right, and start dealing with the Agora and pirate, black market Fridays, man.
Right. So for example, you, Ernie, were at my place last summer, and so you basically got to hang with these pigs. You were out there feeding these pigs. You were out there helping me put up fencing for the pigs, and you saw what the pigs did to the forest. Yeah. And so you experienced the whole deal. So those pigs had a really good life for pigs compared to – the ones that are factory farmed, it's 4,000.
Yeah, no. They're going out in the woods and doing their pig thing.
Yeah, and they're eating mushrooms and the rotten wood and eating the grubs. And you can't find a rotted piece of wood out in the woods after the pig's been there because they bust it all up. They want to eat all the grubs in the wood and whatever bugs. They love that stuff.
It is amazing how you can manage a farm, a wooded area, with the different animals that you use.
Yep.
And I saw, I keep telling this story. This is awesome. Jay had, you know, the brush, it's thick undergrowth. I mean, you have a bunch of little trees and just, you could take a bulldozer and just blade it all up and do whatever. Yep. And you lose your topsoil and all that other crap. But you put the pigs out there and they just root all the ground, you know, but then there's these trees and you still got the roots and so on. So Jay would go out and he'd use a stick or whatever. He'd make a 6-inch deep hole or more. And he just put corn kernels in there. Well, then pigs, man, they'll move a 12-foot boulder to get one little kernel of corn. I mean, you know, it was amazing to watch them mow over trees. It's like having beavers that take up the root.
Yeah. like when you say pick up a boulder, so just imagine a rock, like a little bigger than a basketball. Like, that's a rock that you don't really want to pick up and put, like, in the back of a truck, you know, because it's
heavy.
It's like 100 pounds, 120 pounds. You know, you hurt yourself, whatever, and rocks don't have handles on them. But, like, you know, you go, if you can get however deep you can, because you got rocks everywhere. But every time I would, like, punch holes in the ground and drop the corn in there, I would almost imagine, like, if you took, like, a pipe, beat it in the ground, pull it out, and you got the dirt out, and you dropped an M80 in there, and then you filled it back in, and you lit the wick and walked away. Basically, when you come back 3 days later, that's kind of what it looks like the pigs did. Like, it blew up. But
they push all the rocks to the fence line. Well, which is just a couple of strands of electrified fence that they get used to and they don't want to play.
Right.
So you have a wall,
that was
a rock wall built by pigs. It's amazing.
That's kind of the only maintenance I really had to do with the fence, is that pigs kept on pushing all the sticks and rocks. But anyways, you get like a rock that's the size of a basketball that you wouldn't like want to pick up and put in the back of a truck. And the pigs pushed it up out of the hole. Now, I didn't sit there and watch them do it, but I'm like, any rocks that's by the surface have like this greenish color, but all the wat rocks that are like under dirt, they look like either white or blue-ish color, because the greenish is like the algae or mold that, you know,
grows lichens or whatever.
Lichens, yeah. So they actually would push these rocks out just to get a little bit, but they worked hard. And another thing is, if you like look at one of my cuts, like my pork chops or country style ribs, like I would have the country style ribs on there, and people like, oh, I'd like a piece of that steak. I'd like that steak right there. I'm like, well, it's not steak. It's a pork cut. And they're like, that's not a beef cut. I'm like, no. They're like, well, why is it so red? Isn't pork the other white meat? And I says, well, if it's factory farm pork, it's white meat. But everybody, I don't watch TV, and I don't know if other white meat is still a thing. But when I was a kid, I can remember.
Other
white meat. Yeah. You'd see big billboards on the side of the road, the other white meat.
But they were marketing, you know, when it was kind of sickly white. Oh, that's a benefit.
Yeah, right.
That's a feature.
So my stuff looks red, like it should. And because my pigs were eating the dirt. Pigs are designed to eat dirt. And they take that topsoil and that dirt and whatever, and they eat it and they poop it back out. And now it's like really awesome, you know, topsoil.
Well, that was another thing you did. One of the fields that you did, you keep them over the winter time when you're not growing onto the garden, the productive areas that you're going to be growing, so that you just have all this manure feeding in and the wood chips. I mean, you're building soil. Nobody builds soil. They just throw some fertilizer on it and, you know, Franken whatever. And when you can, if you manage your farm, that's why you need a farm. You need animals and food and gardens and chickens. And, you know, if you manage all this stuff, you're adding.
Mm-hmm.
You're adding to the soil. You're adding to the farm. You're adding to your bottom line. You're adding to your nutrition. You're adding. And it seems like there's been a great effort to keep this knowledge away, to disincentivize it, to do whatever. It's got to be, you know, franking whatever at the compound of the pig farm of, you know, assembly line of whatever the hell, you know.
Yeah,
this kind of knowledge that you've been sharing and the quality of it. And I'm glad that you were confident enough to have a premium. You know, you just go, no, this is how much it costs.
Yeah.
Yeah, but don't buy it. I mean, you know.
So we did lower the price a little bit on the cheeseburger, on the bacon cheeseburgers. We were at $12 at one point down in the field, and people were walking up and walking away. So I lowered it, you know, cheeseburger $10. I think it was a burger $10, slice of cheese $1, and bacon $1. So I just basically made it $9 for a cheeseburger and $10 for a bacon cheeseburger. And my wife was a little annoyed about that, because she like, You know, she keeps track of how much time I'm out there fooling around with the pigs and making things happen, you know. So, but I, you know, when a family comes up and they want to feed, you know, a couple of kids some cheeseburgers and, you know, to spend $40 to, you know, mom, dad, and two kids have a cheeseburger, it's a lot of money. And, you know, it shouldn't be, you know, $48. But what I would do is, like, I just give them a link of sausage or something with it also. But back to the white meat, I want people to understand why the white meat propaganda was pushed. So pigs need iron, just like we need iron. Mm-hmm. And when you have them on a concrete floor barn, so if you take a pig and you confine it to a concrete floor barn, and they're like 10, 12-acre barns, and there's literally 4,000 pigs in the barn. People could just internet search the factory farming pigs and see the actual numbers if they want to check on them. So when these pigs are not on dirt, they're not getting any iron. So they do actually give them an iron supplement, like a synthesized iron supplement in their feed. But they basically, the pigs don't really absorb it because this is synthetic iron. And so this is why the meat comes out white. So like when Smithfield or Tyson raise a pig, or these farmers raise a pig, at 4.5 months old, the pig is 330 pounds. And they want them. My pigs were like 280 pounds at 9 months old. And I fed them a lot of feed, but they were outside. So when it's like, you know, the other day when it was really hot here, you know, it was in the 90s, and you got feed out there for the pigs, they don't eat much of it when it's really hot. They don't really eat. But when it's like right now, it's like, you know, in the 60s and it's raining, just like this, they won't stop eating. So what they do with the commercial operations is they keep the temperature like 60-something degrees in the barn. They air conditioning them, or they heat them, depending on what's going on. A lot of times they use air conditioning or ventilation. And then they also keep the humidity at a certain rate. And like you saw the pigs I bought, the piglets I bought last year, they were very white. So we had to try to keep them in the shade, because they would get sunburned pretty easy. You see them get a little sunburn on their ears and stuff. Because those are a generation of essentially commercial pigs that, you know, are anemic. And the reason the meat is white is because they're not getting proper iron. And they're also walking around, you know, in their own a foot of shit by the time they're, you know, the last couple weeks of their life. They're just swimming in their own shit pretty much, you know, in these commercial, you know,
operations. Yeah, but they got a bunch of antibiotics.
Well, they have to have antibiotics to keep them alive. So when you see white pork, that's from an anemic pig. To where New Hampshire, we have a lot of red in the ground, a lot of that red clay. So we have a lot of iron, natural iron in the ground. And pigs do really well on this New Hampshire soil. And then the soil's like useless to grow anything in until after you have animals on it. And then the thing I did was, so I got these tree guys that come around, and I'm always hustling wood chips. Every time I see the tree guys, I'm like, hey guys, I want some wood chips. So now when they show up, I send them all home with bacon and each guy gets a package of something that shows up on it. Sometimes two trucks show up and there's six guys. I pass out, you know, six things of country style ribs or pork chops to them or whatever. And they freaking love it. So I'm like, hey, each time
they always make a trip to Jay's.
So they bring me all these wood chips. And then I take the wood chips where I feed the pigs. I make hog panels. And I have penned off areas, so if I need to, like, capture one up because he cut him. Like, I had one cut himself. We had to doctor him up a little bit. And it's going to happen. You're in the woods, you know. So I make it so I feed him in one area, like the spent grain that I get from a local brewery. We get milk from two operations, an organic operation called Stonyfield, another one called Hood. They're not organic. And then we get, I got three local delis that they got five-gallon buckets. You know, and I got friends that stop by the deli and they just
eggs.
The eggs. I get the eggs from an organic egg guy who's got 20,000 chickens.
They have cracks or they break or they're
wrong size.
You know, something happened and they just put them in a big giant barrel of they just throw them away. Just
5 gallon buckets.
And that's freaking awesome for pig. They love that stuff.
So then I buy some non-GMO corn and oats from a guy in Maine. I buy a little bit of non-GMO corn from a guy in the guy in Massachusetts is planting, he just planted 60 acres non-GMO corn. He didn't do non-GMO corn last year. It's his first non-GMO corn he's doing since like basically the 80s. And a lot of the reason he is doing non-GMO corn is because I was basically telling him that he could market it for, you know, way more money than the GMO corn. And the thing is he was telling me that the Roundup is almost sort of useless with the weeds, and he built a weed burner. And I actually helped him design the weed burner a little bit. But basically, he built a weed burner so he can go through the field instead of spraying Roundup. He's just got these propane, you know, flamethrowers that go down at the bottom, and they burn all the grass and stuff off the bottom, because the grass takes a lot of your nitrogen out, and that's what the corn needs. And corn, you can run a flamethrower right along it once the leaves are like 3 feet off the ground. Mm-hmm. You're not going to bother the corn. Corn is pretty tough. They're stalks. I mean, you'll try to rip a corn stalk out of the ground. It's hard. And it's like ripping a tree out of the ground that size. So, so anyways, which is cool. So I've had like a lot of effect with like a lot of these guys. I'm trying to push them and like, let's get off of Monsanto and, you know, get off the subsidies and all this stuff. So, stay away from white meat. So my pigs, also what I do with my pigs is, so back to the wood chips, where I would make the, little corral so I could corral them in and I always wanted to, like, if I had a fence broken and I could just throw a bucket of grain in where they eat, they all come running and I just latch the gate and, or if it was a pig's got out, by the time it got dark, they were over by the pen trying to get in because they knew that's where the food was. So that was good. So there I would put about a foot of wood chips down in this area, and it was maybe, I don't know, 20, 30 foot deep and maybe 40 foot wide. You know, I had a couple of them. One was a little smaller, one was a little bigger. But a lot of that stuff, what I did is I haven't even moved those wood chips yet, and the pigs haven't been there since April. But what I did do is where all those wood chips are, and I would keep on adding wood chips as they would get, like,
pushed into the mud.
Yeah, and it would push in the mud and break it up. So I got all kinds of, like, volunteer tomatoes, volunteer squash, because I have a couple of neighbors who had gardens. Last summer, they would just bring me cucumbers and, like, all the stuff that was banged up and damaged. They would just come over and feed it to the pigs. In fact, one guy across the street.
Then the seeds come out and they germinate, and here's your garden.
He'd bring his grandkids over, and the grandkids just love feeding the pigs. And I had a couple people in the city. They would bring a bunch of stuff, and then all in one market right down the road, where I actually retail some meat right in their store, the USDA meat, and you can buy it with cryptocurrency. And I even heard that they will accept goldbacks now at all in one market, which is cool.
Goldbacks is a process by which they were able to make polymer coated, kind of a plastic, but it's actual gold. It has this amount of X amount of whatever is a process that it's a gold.
1/1000th of an ounce is the smallest denomination gold back, which at Pork Fest, I've been calling it $5.
And it was cool because the kids would come and sell, let's see, five for $20.
Yep.
And then I get full price at, like, Jay's.
Yep.
You know, so I'm like, come here, kid, man. Well, get me a Jay discount. You know?
So anyways, so at the delis, you know, I'm always getting, like, the, you know, parts of tomatoes that they don't use, pieces of lettuce they don't use, you know, any leftover bread or anything that doesn't look right. And there's three delis within a few miles of me, of these, you know, New Hampshire convenience store, deli, you know, hardware store places, gas station. And then, like, every now and then there's, like, a couple slices of pizza in there that they just take off the, you know, out of the pizza display thing. And So there's a lot of, like, peppers growing now because when these guys are doing their green peppers and their red peppers, they get all the middles of the green and red peppers. So this food forest is, like, littered in all kinds of, like, I don't even know what's growing, but, like, it looks like
the pigs will go eat it. Looks
like they will. There's no pigs there now. I'm getting, like, 20 more pigs, like, a week after.
And it's gone.
And then so I went as soon as about a week before the pigs were off the one part. I just seeded everything. This was, like, April something. I think April 10th or something. I seeded. I put a bunch of rye, oats, and some clover seeds in, and then the pigs will walk around and kind of mash it in, and then I had them gone a few days later, and then after the pigs were gone, I planted a bunch of daikon radishes. I bought a five pound bag of daikon radishes, and I went and planted them in the woods, planted them in the wood chips. When I say planted them, I just kind of walked out there and just threw them all over the place and just kind of
stomped them in or whatever.
So I'm excited. I see where everything started coming up. Like, and I've been up here for, like, you know, 10 days, and it hadn't rained much. Now we got some good rain. We got some good heat. A lot of this stuff should really.
So you go back, you're going to go, damn.
Yeah. So
we need to clear the forest with some more pigs.
Well, then I'm going to put 20 pigs out there, And it'll be interesting to see what they do. And then once they start, the pigs start getting the ground all cleaned up, I'll go out there about every day and I'll just use a tank of gas and a chainsaw and I'll drop a bunch of saplings, like maples and oaks, and they'll just eat all leaves off them. And then after they eat all leaves off them, it's a lot easier to deal with them. I'll, you know, push them in a pile, and we might be able to burn some brush actually when I get home if we still get some rain. It's been really dry. So,
The burning, you know, seems like a waste. You can wood chip them and then you do it. But then you also, in your furnace, you have a big
wood boiler.
Boiler, just a big fire inside this big metal, whatever, with a big door. It looks like you're shoveling coal into a locomotive,
right?
And you put these branches in these buckets with holes and everything, and you make biochar.
Yep.
So talk about biochar and what role it plays.
So, so actually what we're doing is biochar is basically pure carbon. Biochar is, we take the wood and we get it really, really hot, so it cooks all the gases out of it, and all that is left is the carbon at the end, so all the fuel is gone.
Black charcoal.
Charcoal. The way you can tell that it's biochar is if you taste it or eat it, it has no taste to it. It's pure carbon. It's actually, and I believe it doesn't, it does conduct electricity. Pure carbon.
Yeah.
So you can test it. There's a way like
that. Yeah, it's a communication thing in the soil of freaking, so you're like Avatar, man, on Pandora.
So I got a buddy actually right now who lives in the city, and he's building a wood gasifier. So he's building basically like a 5 kW power plant wood gasifier, all on a pallet. He bought all the parts. He's got all the stuff. It's got runs on a one cylinder. He bought a brand new Harbor Freight, whatever engine to use, a generator, a controller, and we're going to experiment this. And so I have all that brush that's dry from last year that I haven't burnt because it's been too dry. And the problem is wood chipping, it just takes a lot of effort. And like the wood chipper I got, the one that we were using, that one is just, it really sucks. It's just a 3-point hitch one. It doesn't have a feed roller to it. It's for doing small stuff.
Yeah, it's for homeowner, right? Kind of got an acre or two and not Jay.
No, I go rent a wood chipper for $260 bucks for the day, and I can just keep on feeding it branches, and it does a good job.
Well, this is the one thing, you know, for those that don't know, a gasifier, what happens is when you have a campfire, you're burning wood, it's really not the wood that burns. You get it to a certain temperature, it releases gases.
Right.
It's the gas that burns. Mm-hmm. So what that means is you could, if you got a fire in a bottom of a, let's say you got a metal tank and you got a fire going underneath and it's separated from a chamber up top and that's hot, you could put wood in there and the gas coming out, you could pipe it into a carburetor.
Yep.
You can run an engine. Mm-hmm. In fact, they do. I mean, mm-hmm. This is, you know, a lot of developing countries, they do this. They put in a bunch of wood and it's a gas that comes off. It's just like converting your gas engine to propane or something.
Exactly.
You know, so you can have an engine run. A gasoline engine will run on wood, mm-hmm. but you have to heat the wood.
Yep.
So that's a separate fire. Well, what happens after all those gases go out and everything? Well, then you're left with just a bunch of black carbon, which is the soil be liking.
Right. It's more, that black carbon is more that biochar is more valuable, I think, than running the engines. And it's just a byproduct of running the engine. And it is the best way to make biochar. If I think it's called Terra Preta. It's somewhere in South America in the Amazon, where thousands of years ago they did what slash and burn was kind of what you and I were doing in the garden last year when the fire department showed up, essentially.
Yeah, it was my fault.
But whatever. And,
don't do it, Ernie. Don't do it. Just a little fire. Just burn it, and here they come.
So anyways, and I have really good fire suppression around my property. I set my
ears. Yeah, we were in the middle of a vacant,
freaking
plowed, all sand, field with a hole in the ground, and they're like,
and water okay, was ready to go.
Yeah.
So anyways, the biochar is the so Terra Preta, if you look that up, you'll see it's this part of it's like the most best soil in the world, and one of the best soil things we can do is add biochar, because what the carbon in the biochar does several things. It acts as a nitrogen buffer. It acts as a it allows for communication between bacteria and fungus, and then uh so So the and then also allows, somehow it allows the bacteria and fungus to somehow communicate with the actual plants. I don't know all the science behind it, but it's kind of like that, like, tree of life thing in that movie Avatar.
Right.
So anyways, huge noticeable difference when you start using biochar. So the way I was making biochar is I was just basically taking the unburnt coals out of my outdoor wood boiler, shoving them into metal buckets and filling them up with water to cool them down. And then I was taking 5-gallon buckets with lids on them. They were from like the roofing glue, and they were, you know, burnt really good because I had them in the wood boiler, and I was filling them with small pieces of wood, clamping them down, and then put them in there and just let them cook. And I would have like a pile of biochar after you shook it up a little bit. It'd be about 1/3, 1/4 full. That's a lot of work. The wood gasifier thing, a buddy of mine's taking that project on, so I'm pretty excited to, you know, provide him all the wood he wants, and, you know, and we're going to either just use the electricity to run a Bitcoin miner, or we're going to somehow pump it back into the house.
So it's whatever. Like, we got this energy from making the biochar that we really want, might as well make use of it doing something.
Right. So the biochar is super important. And like a little bag of biochar on like Etsy or eBay is, you know, like a 1-gallon Ziploc bag is like $38.
What?
Yes. But yeah.
You're in the wrong business, man.
Well, another thing we added to our farm that you haven't seen yet, but you'll see when you get back, is we got about 35 or 40 mama rabbits. And
oh, you went rabbit.
Well, I didn't go rabbit. So Stu, you remember Stu, the guy that he showed up there last year from Arizona, and he worked on your bus a little bit. So he lives in my other dome, the little dome, him and his family, and they got rabbit experience. They know how to deal with rabbits. So they're like, hey, can we do rabbits? And I'm like, yeah. And then, so they start every day, every weekend, Stu's out there, you know, building a rabbit city. And I'm like,
how cool is that? Are they making it kind of a raised pens, and they're just in a 3x3 pen or something?
So it's all raised pens. Basically, all the gear he just found on Craigslist, people either gave away or it was very inexpensive. All the cages, he bought a whole bunch of cages, bought a whole bunch of stuff. And then he's got raised pens, and they got collection buckets, and they're collecting the poop, and they're just throwing it right in the garden because you can pretty much direct, you know, rabbit manure. It's
ready made.
Ready made. And even that is like $9 for a 1-gallon Ziploc bag plus $7 shipping and handling on Etsy and eBay. Rabbit manure.
No way.
Yeah. So then we got a whole area fenced in, and they planted where the rabbits are. They made it sort of critter proof, and also rabbits will dig holes right into the ground. So we put chain link fence down so they can't dig into the ground. And then they put topsoil over a chain link fence, and then they seeded it in whatever rabbits like. I don't remember all of different blends of whatever he put in there. So it's like a rabbit pasture. So you can take the rabbits out of the cages and just let them graze. Or, you know, Stu's kids and even my daughter, they just go rip the grass up out of the ground and just feed it to the rabbits. The other thing they've been doing is you throw in like, when I take down the saplings, you throw in like maple leaves and oak leaves. Rabbits just gobble them right up, and they make their pellets, and then.
Oh, how do you mainly feed a rabbit? What are you getting as a rabbit feed from the store?
So they're using a rabbit feed from the store. They feed them alfalfa, and then we just feed, and then the kids are feeding them flowers and grass and, you know, tree branches all the time with leaves on it. So
you got a rabbit pasture that's how big, and how's it contained?
Chain link fence on the bottom, mm-hmm. And then we got chain link fence on the side, and then it's wrapped with chicken wire also, because a lot of the, you know, rabbits can fit through the chain link fence, mm-hmm. You know, when they're small. And then some of the critters like weasels and stuff that'll kill rabbits and certain things will fit through the chain link fence, so you gotta wrap it with chicken wire too. But the chicken wire is not quite tough enough for, like, you know, coyotes and stuff, which we definitely do have some. Although we haven't lost any predators, we lost any critter and anything to predators this year.
Well, you know, it's and of course, you know, pretty much everybody up here has got a sidearm, mm-hmm. You know, mm-hmm. And you're walking around the farm and coyote bang, problem solved.
I shot a rat the other day.
Yeah,
know,
boom.
With a 380. Because it was,
any rat left?
Yeah. The bullet just went straight through him, you know, and I, you know, got, you know, it didn't, like, it's not like I shot him with a hollow point .45. And if it was a hollow point bullet, there would have been much. But it's a pretty good sized rat, and he was in the chicken coop. So And then I got
what damage do rats do in the chicken coop? They take the eggs, kill the chickens.
Well, they take the eggs, and it's just
they just hang out.
And I just don't need a bunch of rats. They eat a lot of the feet.
Yeah.
And I don't want a lot of rats around, so I got rat traps. I got mouse traps. I got.
You know what
traps.
Ate all our chicken feet? It was doves. Where we were in the back of our place there, I had gazillions of doves. We put netting around. They'd figure out a way to get in.
Yep.
And then I kind of like...
When I was in Colorado, I had that problem.
Well, I was kind of... You know, my mindset was, I go, you know, I'm going to go ahead and make it difficult for them. So I don't have the big, giant, galloping hordes of whatever, but a few... I want them to know the feed is there. So when I do need them and I open it up, I got a bunch of doves, you know? I was like... Dove breast is nice, so we didn't totally shut them out because I might need them.
What solved my problem in Colorado, it was crows, and the crows, we just shoot them because the crows aren't afraid. Actually, crows will kill your chickens. They killed a bunch of the meat birds up at Bardo Farm last year. He had a real problem with crows, you know, the ravens. Members, you know, Xander from Arizona.
Mm-hmm.
So I bought one of those chicken feeders that he makes that when a chicken stand on it,
it opens. I have one of those.
That solved the problem with the doves eating all the chicken feed. But yeah, the rats, the biggest problem with the rats is they'll just eat your feed, and they'll just make 100 babies and eat more feed. And they just, before you know it, you got a bunch of fucking rats. And then they also, rats will rip shit up in the garden. I got a couple of nephews that hang out a lot.
They're not an ad.
Yeah, no, they're not an ad. And then we got tons of chipmunks. So
they're not in that.
No. So my nephew's got a BB gun, and I told him I'd give him $2 a chipmunk, and he's actually down there right now. He's like, I got 3 chipmunks. He sends me a text message the other day. You owe me $6. I'm like, no problem, buddy. So yeah, he's 9 years old, and so him and his mom are kind of watching the place while we're up here, and he's been shooting chipmunks with his pellet gun or BB gun, whatever he's got. And what did I want to get back to? Oh, so
the biochar.
Oh, and the other thing I did is if you eat biochar, like we eat biochar, it absorbs like toxins.
Yeah, it's a cure your crap, and you don't die from a lot of stuff. It's a poison antidote.
So a lot of things I did with my pigs is that I always had like one of the feeders had biochar in it, and it was just free feed. And you go over there and I dump a bunch of biochar in, and they'd all come check it out. And some of them would eat a lot of it, and some of them would just look at it and go the other way. And so now when you put the biochar through the pig, now the pig's going to poop it out. Now you got biochar infused pig poop all right there. And then it's all with the all in with the wood chips. And I'm pretty excited. That's one of the things I'm going to do with the camera. So I took the can. I did a lot of video on my.
Okay. We gotta talk about the camera. First, I gotta go to the bathroom. Let's take a break real quick,
okay.
And we'll just start it up. Give me a second because I want to definitely do this camera thing. All right, hold on. Filming of all the stuff that you're doing. This is something that you know everyone's waiting on.
Right.
You know, and Derek and I. This is how I knew that if we could get you set up on the IPFS. We get you the computer to be able to do it. You need a computer anyway. You know, you just took a dump. And we had these really good cameras that Luke Radowski, you know, is good friends of both of ours. And he uses the same equipment, and he can show us, you know, how to do it. He showed me some stuff and everything, but I just haven't had time to do it. Well, they came up with a new model. It's Osmo 2. So I went ahead and I said, you know, I'll get the new one. Since I haven't really studied and worked this other one, I'll just get a new one and just go through that. He knows the one. He could teach you on that. Yep. They're the same thing. It's just, I don't know, it's got a 2 on it. But so I go, well, I ordered a bunch of, you know, harnesses and stuff to put on the tractor and your head and your wrist and your chest. And, you can strap it on the dog or freaking, you know, Cypress, and she can crawl around and, you know, from the perspective of, you know.
Yeah.
so we got all this stuff done, and we went through the new equipment, and we kind of divvied it up, and I'll get to it hopefully. I was like, tomorrow was going to be a day I was going to set aside, start working on this stuff. So we got this all set up for Jay, and his whole thing is to be able, thank you, to be able to do filming of him farming all day, every day with Cypress, because she's a rock star. She's got her own, you know, channel of fandom. And then you can share this with people, but We wanted to demonstrate how we can do it to where it can't be censored, because I know it's going to happen. Jay is going to talk about every interface with the man, everything that they say did in /form/ you know, whatever the hell is coming out of the, you know, the government. And he'll give his opinion, and I go, that's what's going to get it banned. Not because he's making biochar. It's going to be whatever Jay, has to say. So I'm like, well, you're definitely going to need pirate communication, because this ain't lasting for long. So we set up the IPFS. You generate the content, and then we're working with other platforms like Library and Float. Float is going to be taking the content, all the metadata, linking to it, embed. We're setting this all up, and Jay is going to be the blaze trail of original content providers and how we set this up, because we are doing it already with full web pages and all, but we're going, we need to make it super, 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 super simple for someone like super busy Jay New. Mm-hmm. And if we set this up to where you can do this and you're using it, it's going to be a template for a lot of other people like you, and rural America gets to have a say and get input and their perspective up. So I know this is going to be popular. So does Derek. So Derek's setting it up. We got you everything set in a test case of Jay's doing us a solid by doing this, you know, the way we need to be able to learn the template for other people. So your plan, because you've done this before. I mean, you've kind of played with it. You know, hell, my first camera got, Jay's got it out of the box playing with it, an SD card. If I wasn't there, So, you know, he already is, you know, chopping at the bit to do this. So I want to encourage that and what we all learn from it. But what is it that you're going to be doing, you think? I mean, it's going to evolve to whatever. But if you got this thing, it's so easy. It's easily charged. It's easily loaded. SD cards are nothing to change. Yep. You can put all day, every day of everything that you're doing, which is all day, every day of Jay. Mm-hmm. And if you do it, but I see a lot of these people that have these video channels, and I go, how the hell do they get anything done? It's all the moving camera, doing camera, going around camera, editing the camera. I'm going, holy shit, when do you guys do any work? Right. More of the time is spent. So we're trying to make it to where it doesn't interfere in your work. But what you do, anybody that comes down, you know, I'm a pretty good trainer, and I'll go through stuff. Jay is, he'll tell you everything, and it's a 3-hour class on a 10-minute thing. So you know that. But if you do it while you're doing it with the video, you save a bunch of time. Derek, not so much. He's like, just get out of my way. I'll just faster. I just do it. I just want to get it done. Jay's the trainer. Jay's the instructor. Jay's the influencer. It's going to be a Jay thing. So it serves everybody's purpose. I mean, all the stuff that we're talking about, how to farm, you know, the soil improvements, dealing with different providers, of butchers, of suppliers, of getting feed for alternative ways of extra, whatever the hell. This is stuff that is going to save lives. Mm-hmm. This is going to prepare us, which makes you dangerous. And when you have an attitude of they're in the way and they can suck it, I don't think you're going to be that long on YouTube. You know what I mean?
Right. Yeah.
You know, so we need to get this information archived and available. Describe to the people the kind of things that you think you'd be spending time videotaping.
So, well, probably the most footage I'm going to have is just, you know, whatever Cypress and I are doing, because that's just, you know, that's fun. And even just like with Jeff Berwick, I mean, with the taco, with, you know, Tacos and Kisses, you know, Jeff and Lucy. I love people just like, Lucy's a huge fan. Well, Cypress being the baby that's all happy and non-vaccinated and, you know, just beautiful. Loving work and beautiful is a lot of people watch these videos just because she's in there. And so anyways, most of it will be like work that I'm doing with Cypress. And literally ever since I've, you know, Cypress has been, you know, 4 months old in the baby carrier, she's been riding around in the tractor with me, feeding pigs, feeding chickens. She's been getting eggs since she was 8 months old. And like, I really want to do is make videos essentially of my daughter doing these chores and having her own job to do. Because like, for example, I have a friend who watches, she's a nanny, and she watches some kids that are in the city. And there are a couple of girls that are 3 years old that she watches. My daughter is 16 months old. And this is Mel, who did my garden stuff last year. And Mel's taking these kids around and weeding gardens with them and putting them to work as she's nannying them, which is good. Now, she says to me, she goes, "Wow, I can't believe how strong cypress is. Like, you hold on to cypress and she wants to get on the ground, you better pay attention, because like she's like squirming. She's like, you ever have a cat try to get away from you?
Yeah,
that's kind of what cypress is.
No. She's UFC, man.
Yeah. So Mel's like, I can't believe how strong cypress is. She's stronger than these 3 year olds that I got hanging out with me. But you know, cypress is constantly just into something, climbing on something, and I. You know, unless she's really
kind of fearless. It's almost scary.
It is. But I don't like.
She's walking tightrope on the power lines between the buildings, kind of crap. You know, I'm like, get off of the table! Holy crap, you're scaring the crap out of me.
I can't leave a ladder anywhere around the house, because she's like, I'm up on the ladder the other day working on the camper before we come to Pork Fest, and
there she goes.
And there's dad, 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 dad. And I look down and there she is. She's like, you know, two steps underneath me on the ladder. And I can't exactly get off the ladder till she moves. And somebody was over there. I don't know who was around the property, but somebody just came and grabbed her. You know,
she is always any kind of restraining of her or holding her back or whatever. Man, she wants to go to hang on Daddy J's cat.
Oh, yeah.
She's over there, you know, I don't want Daddy.
Yep.
Definite daddy's girl.
Oh, yeah, yeah. So, but the thing is when you give kids chores, it's going to make these kids, we did a talk here at Pork Fest on using the wrong tool to get the job done, and just all the things I've had to do over the years. Me and my brothers, we did this talk, and a lot of people really enjoyed it, but...
Yeah, the chisel is a screwdriver.
Yeah, the chisel is a screwdriver, it's a wrench, you know, whatever.
It's a hammer.
Yep, the chisel can be a hammer, So anyways, the thing is like people buy a lot of the children are just being pacified with electronic devices, with entertainment. A lot of kids are being entertained. And yes, some of this entertainment is teaching kids how to read and how to do their ABCs and all that shit too. But
I'm hearing this in the background. There's kids out there playing volleyball, soccer, or whatever the hell they're doing. And it's the rain.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, I can hear the rain. So if you hear that sound, I think it's the rain.
Raindrops on the roof,
yeah.
On the canopy. So anyways, what I suggested was, I was like, listen, if your kids, you want a toy, they should 3D print a toy. So get a 3D printer and they'll show your kids how to use a 3D printer, and they'll have to use a, interface.
CAD or whatever.
Because my brother Josh, he got in a 3D printer and he taught himself how to do it. And he has conversations with people who actually run AutoCAD for a living, and they come up to me, like right here at Porkfest, he's like, yeah, I'm a, you know, career machinist. I do AutoCAD. I teach AutoCAD. This one guy's telling me, and he goes, and your brother never went to school to do AutoCAD, and he just basically, like, schooled me on how to do some things on AutoCAD that I didn't understand or know how to do, and I've been doing this for, like, 12 years. He's like, that's really cool. And so the thing is, but not, we need to not pacify our kids, but it's really hard to put our kids to work when we live in an urban environment. When we go
to... You're trying to keep them in the house, in the room, in
right,
the chair.
Right,
in front of the TV.
And like, or send them to daycare. I mean, I almost kind of want to have some kind of daycare man camp thing at my place where I put the kids to work. And like, and I got a six and 7 year olds coming next week, and we're going to stack brush.
You're gonna what?
Stack brush. All the brush.
You know, stack brush.
Yeah, we're just gonna put it in piles so we can burn it or do
like
whatever.
You said, stack brush. And there's a new thing I don't know about.
No, stack brush. We're gonna stack all the trees that we cut down last year to put them in the strategic burn piles. And and we're gonna build fence and get the pasture all set up for the food forest, kind of ready for the new pigs that are coming in. So anyways, these kids, if we can give them constructive stuff to do, and like to go do all my farm chores, like earlier this spring when I had like 50, you know, 30 or 40 pigs here, to go do all the chores, I could like just, if I didn't do anything else but just what the pigs needed and what the chickens needed, I could do it in less than an hour. If I got cypress with me, it does take me almost 3 hours to do it.
All right.
But that time is so well, like, worth it. And
and appreciated by others. And when you're using the video, now you're multiplying it in the whole freaking culture of Uncle Jay.
Yeah.
You know, wasn't there an Uncle Jay on video doing some Uncle Jay?
So there's a YouTube channel, Uncle Jay, that I haven't added any content to for years. But when I was in Colorado, I got I was just, you know, uploading videos from my phone, and I was, you know, had a thing that would hold it in a dashboard, you know, on the windshield of the tractor or the truck I was driving. And we were, you know, chopping corn and mowing hay and raking hay and all that stuff. And so I did make a whole bunch of just raw videos. Put them on YouTube. I use a little bit of that YouTube editor. I can understand why these guys really like using YouTube, because it's real easy to just YouTube.
Yeah, boom.
From your device.
So, which is why we're replicating this to make it easy. That's what we need to get away from them.
My goal is I don't want people to be dependent on government. And I also don't want people to be dependent on me or my neighbors or my friends. So that's why I bought 250 piglets last spring, and I sold 200 of them. So, like, for example, we had several families that bought, you know, 3 to 6 pigs or 2 to 6 pigs, and they brought the pigs back to my place and last fall or last winter, and they butchered the pigs themselves and with their family, and we had the equipment, and my brother and I bought the equipment, and my brother's really good at butchering the pigs. And so that was a really good experience for – like this one family, they have 5 children, and the youngest one was 3, and they were here at Pork Fest, and I think the oldest one was like 13 or 4 or 14, and they were all here at Pork Fest, and the 3-year-old goes sees my brother Chris and goes, "You're a pig butcher," and he's like, "You make good bacon." He tells the little kid tells my brother Chris, because Chris is like, he's, you know, he butchered probably 200 pigs in the past year, and he got real good at it.
Damn.
Or year and a half. Well, that's how you get good at it. You know, you get the first
200 anything can make you good at something.
Yeah. Yep. Huh. And, so now he can like do it with his eyes closed, you know? I want to teach people survival skills. I want to teach people life skills. I want to teach people how to live without government. And one of the things I want to do is, if you're here in New Hampshire, and you want to, you know, raise 3 pigs in your backyard, you raise, you know, 30 or 40 meat birds in your backyard. You know, doing cows, you kind of really, that's a little tough to do in your backyard unless you got like a, you know, 10 acre backyard. You know, the pigs and the chickens and rabbits are super realistic. So the things that we're going to focus on is stuff that's not expensive to get into that people can do. So the whole rabbit thing, like with Stu's family, a lot of this video, we're going to do all stuff about rabbits, which basically that's going to be just me doing video.
The conversion numbers on feed to pound to meat rabbit thing is, I had no idea. You start off with a few rabbits, you're 300 pounds a month within a year or something. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's some ridiculous number like that. And I'm going, wow.
And the thing with rabbits and pigs and even chickens is you sort of don't even need to have like stuff from the feed store to raise those animals. Like I did go buy a lot of feed when I had, you know, 50 pigs, you know, all winter long, but like I'm doing 20 pigs this year because my local food supply between the brewery, the and the convenience stores and my egg guy, I won't have to buy much grain. Very little grain I'll have to buy between just feeding 20 pigs, which is key. You want to do it so you don't have to spend a lot of money.
Well, the brewery, you mentioned the brewery, and people don't know what you're talking about. When you make beer, you're using, you know, barley and hops and whatever the heck that you're doing.
Yep.
Once it goes through the process and you ferment it or whatever, there's a bunch of this biomass that's just there.
Yep.
Well, pigs love that.
Yeah.
You know, they're like, gimme, 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 get a little buzz or something.
Yep.
But so Jay is sort of, and that's one thing years ago when I went by to interview and look at Bardo Farms back in the day. And we went and spent the day there and went through all their stuff. Well, they got a lot of their pig feed from, I don't know, the expired food of the grocery store or produce that didn't sell of week-old bread of who gives a crap. It's just cow. It's pigs. I mean, you know, freaking pigs will eat it. Let Mikey Pig eat it. I mean, you know, they'll eat anything. And it converts it into the money. Now, the food.
Now, the one niche that Neil Smith has with Bardo Farm is, so Neil's been there since 2007. He moved here for the Free State Project 2007. They bought that property. And there was basically, you know, nothing there, just trees. I think there was a house ready, and they, you know, it wasn't an acre cleared, and they got, you know, 14 acres, 18 acres cleared now or whatever.
Well, they have a lot more than that. How much land did they have there?
270.
270?
Yep, I think.
Oh my God, how much did they pay for that?
I don't know. I'm not really sure.
Probably not that much, but it has trees.
It has trees. It's off grid. You know, so his electricity is really expensive. He pays about $1 per kilowatt. He's got a bunch of freezers he's running all the time, and it would cost about $100,000 to bring power to his house.
Needs some solar and battery goody.
He does have solar. They just upgraded his solar, I think, a year ago because solar got, you know, inexpensive.
Really cheap, yeah.
But anyways, so Neil's been hustling these deals where he gets all the produce from like 9 or 12 grocery stores, all the throwaway food. So one of the things that he gets is like gold if you're finishing pigs is he gets so much fruit. So you know the little cups that you can walk into the grocery store and it's like a little parfait
assortment
thing,
cup
whatever.
Thing.
Like he's got a couple of slices of watermelon, pineapple,
right.
So you know he'll get several hundred pounds of that a week. The hardest part about that is just dealing with it, you know, opening it up and dumping it.
Right.
One of the things that he's been doing is we got a lot of friends. And a lot of his friends are bringing his kids up there to have them do that stuff. And the kids are being put to work, you know, just, you know, and I like paying the kids in bacon. I'm like, go home and tell, you know, like the one kid a couple weeks ago, he came with his mom and I paid him in some bacon and I gave him a little money. He helped clean up a bunch of brush. He's 7 years old. And he's like, look, mom, I'm bringing the bacon home. So he's all happy about bringing the bacon home. And that makes these kids feel good when they get, you know, they're actually, you know, feeding the family. They're doing what they
want to do. Oh, my God, Jay, you must be canceled and deplatformed, demonetized and de-everything. You can see, you know, from this experience, you know, what we're just talking about here, this is the threat to what they, them, those are trying to do.
Yes, absolutely.
You know, this is it. You know, the self-sufficiency of declare your independence. Well, you can't be independent if you're dependent.
Yeah, guys like
guys all the time.
Bill Gates and Klaus Schwab do not want me doing what I'm doing.
Nope.
You just and if anybody,
especially listens, with Animu,
especially exactly, they're anti-meat. They're they're anti-freedom. They want you to be a
slave. Why anti-meat? Well, what do you think the real reason is?
Because the major way to control a population is to control the calories they get. So what they want to do is they want to make it so all the food has to be the gruel coming from the Soylent Green factory, you know, that they produce and they control, and they can put the special hormones in to, you know, make you a feminized man or a masculized woman, and basically able so you can't reproduce, so you can't, so you can't even think. I mean, I believe it's really important that as humans we consume animal-based fat just so our brains, you know, this is how our brains evolved to what they are, is what I believe is the fact that we're consuming animal-based fat.
I'm sure that has a lot to do with it. The main thing was just the ability to, over 30-something percent of the calories we consume just supplies energy to the brain.
Yes.
I mean, that was, to do that and be an herbivore, you'd be doing what, you know, apes do. They sit there and eat all day every day.
Right.
You know, that's why animals, that's why you got these animals, they got their head down in the grass constantly.
Yep.
And all they're doing is converting solar energy into, you know, meat for me energy.
Right.
You know, so when you do meat, all of a sudden that concentration of energy frees up your time.
Right.
And that's why, you know, meat and potatoes or meat and vegetables or meat and something, it's going to be some meat. If you're not getting, you know, at least, I don't know, 4 or 7 ounces of meat a day or something, you're either spending a lot of time growing, doing something else. And there are, I guess, you can have a vegan diet, I guess, and be okay, but it's enormous amounts of energy. They're talking about how they want to save the world. Well, tell me how much petrol went into processing, transporting, doing, growing all of this. And they're not really doing that because it's not really the goal. Their goal is to keep you malnourished.
Right. So with meat, we're able to feed the community. We're able to feed ourselves. New Hampshire I believe is one of the most stable, food stable places that I've experienced. And but I haven't been all over the place. Upstate New York is very food stable. Maine is food stable. Rural America, where it rains and you have a lot of lush foliage, is pretty food stable. If you take a left or a right out of my driveway, you drive. So I travel to Western Mass a couple times a month. I travel to, up north in New Hampshire is a place I go over in Vermont. Like, I'm going to go to Vermont, next week, probably every day. Maybe one morning when you're over my house, you should come get a load of hay with me.
Yeah,
check that out.
That'd be awesome.
We'll leave it like – I leave it like 4 o'clock.
I'll be your cameraman.
Yeah.
But you got your own cameraman stuff now mounted on the windshield.
Yeah, whatever. But as we're strapping the hay down and the guy's loading the hay, you can take some footage of how that goes. That would be good. Because I was just going to set up the tripod in the field on a bale we're not using and hopefully not, forget the damn thing. Because that'll happen.
No doubt.
But anyways, so like next couple of weeks, I'm gonna go get a bunch of hay, and I'm gonna drive.
You have to fashion some kind of rain hood or something for it too.
Yeah, well, we'll try not to. We're not in, like, if it's doing this, we're not getting the hay.
Yeah.
It's got to be clear weather. So I'm gonna go over and get the hay. But all these places I travel to, so now I have an idea. And I stop because I'm nosy. I want to know what my neighbors are doing, because my ambition is, if they're doing it wrong, I want to help them. Like, I want to help them. So I got one neighbor. I've actually gave him, he's getting, while I'm gone here at Pork Fest, he's basically picking up a bunch of the food until I get my pigs back from the local convenience store. Because otherwise, it's just going to go in a pile on the ground, and I'm going to dump wood chips on it, and it's just going to turn into compost. I don't have anything. I don't have any pigs at my place, right now. So he's getting them, and he's just got 3 pigs, and he's, got, 25 meat birds, and he's got a bunch of egg laying birds. And then I got, so a whole bunch of my neighbors are basically raising livestock for their own families. So they're not having to go pull from the supply chain. And they're taking their surplus and they're just passing on some other neighbors or friends or whatever. And that is one of the things I want to really encourage, because people are really intimidated about what I'm talking about and they don't understand it. And now once I put together a video on, hey, look at the 25 meat birds I raised basically with my, 1 year old daughter helping me. Look at this, like, I'm going to really well document these 20 pigs. So one of the things I want to do is,
how much time, effort, money,
spreadsheet? Yeah, I want to, like another friend of mine is good at spreadsheets, and I think I just hired an accountant to where, like, every time I buy some grain, I'm going to send them, a photo or a text message. Hey, I just spent $1,000 on feed. I just spent $200 on fencing supplies, whatever, because I want to, like, start figuring that end of it out. That's the part I'm not real good at. But anyways, and you're not going to raise your own food really cheaper then you can go buy it.
Yeah,
and that's but you go look at steak in at the Shaw's over here down the road. We were at Shaw's a couple days ago getting some stuff, and it's like pink. It's like a dye. I see what meat looks like when it comes off a cow. I see what it looks like after I vacuum seal it. I see what it looks like after it sits in the freezer for 6 weeks or a year. And it don't look like that, stuff in the grocery store. It's and there's shit added to it. I don't know what it is, but it's just, you don't know where it comes from. But when you raise animals on your own land and you do it with your kids, the most important thing about this is the kids, because I'm going to be an old man someday. And I want all these kids that I influence to be able to take care of me and their parents. So we don't have to be put in nursing homes or sent off to the freaking Soylent Green factory to be recycled because we're useless. Well, if they can't take care of themselves, they can't take care of me. They can't take care of you. There's going to be a time in our lives where we won't be able to take care of ourselves. And that's a reality that, kind of like thinking about now. And I'm thinking about it with the kids.
Now, well, that's Logan's run, man. He's putting in carousel and you're dead.
yeah, whatever. So when the kids, when these kids are more interested in, going and, weeding the garden and, feeding the animals and dealing with the animals. And that is the norm from a young age. Like, I grew up working. You know, even here at Porkfest, they did a
instead of playing Minecraft.
Right, right. I don't even. Yeah, mm-hmm. All these kids talk about is
yeah, they do Minecraft. They're farming when they can actually go out and do it.
Right, right. And I really enjoy working. I like building stuff. I like producing things. I like troubleshooting things. So the thing is who's really lacking confidence is, you know, the moms and dads my age that have young toddlers don't really think they can do this stuff. So when I prove to them it could be done with the videos and then they see how it's done, and then the kids are like, oh yeah, I want to do that. I mean, just buying 6 egg laying birds, if you got like a little patch of land, you know, you don't need much. You can have a quarter acre, and you can have, you know, 6 or 10, you know, hens, and you do that when you got, you know,
hell, you don't even need that. Right. I mean,
you'd probably get in trouble doing it. It wouldn't be a cool thing to do at Rogers Campground. Maybe actually they wouldn't care. But when these kids have this responsibility, like my daughter, 8 months old, she's in the baby carrier facing forward because I want her to be an input baby. I want her to, you know, not be afraid, but just to be curious. She's been collecting the eggs since she was 8 months old. And I got videos of her collecting the eggs when she's 8 months old. I got a boy who's going to be here. Little boy's going to be here in September. We're going to do the same thing with him. He's going to be, his sister's going to be showing him how to collect the eggs. And the thing is, as this goes on, you know, the older kids teach younger kids how to do these chores. Now the older kids get to understand the chores better. They get better.
You know, there was recently we had a story on Freedom's Phoenix, and it was about but it was some celebrity that was chastising stay-at-home homemaker mothers that they need to get a job and kind of, and I'm like, are you freaking kidding me?
Yeah. Rothschild propaganda.
You know, well, this is what the Equal Rights Amendment thing in the 70s was all about. Yep. They wanted to get, you know, the kids isolated, latchkey, yep. Government raise them, mom paying taxes. And, yep. I mean, that was their, later you find out that was their stated reason. Mm-hmm. You know, that's why they did it. So it wasn't about, you know, empowering women or anything. It was about, you know, screwing up an entire generation.
Several generations.
So this is, yeah. So now we're looking at, I am very happy that I have, 2 of my 4 kids, their, spouses stay home,
mm-hmm.
you know, my daughter stays home and my daughter-in-law stays home. And the other ones spend a lot of time taking care of kids and doing their good mothers. But, the stay at home ones, I'm digging it. And yeah. Think that they're, we go to a soccer game, and the women, they'll go like this. They'll go, oh, what do you do? You know, oh, I'm a homemaker. I stay home, you know, and homeschool kids. They're like, oh, really? You're like, I go, oh, shut up. Are you kidding me? What the hell are you doing that's of value, you know? And this is, I really have been encouraging that. Staying home, raising generation next,
mm-hmm.
and to have the exposure to the kind of stuff that you're doing to a generation that even know what the hell where food comes from. I tell you, when our kids were, it was not only stay at home, but we didn't do a lot of gardening or anything where we were until they were like 8, 9, mm-hmm. something like that. We waited too long. We moved to this one home in the winter. So there wasn't a lot of growth in the backyard and everything. It had a pool area and it had all these, you know, just like plants and stuff. You didn't even know what it was. They weren't fruiting. Then all of a sudden spring hit. There was grapes everywhere, raspberries, whatever berries. So we went ahead and did a 10 by 10, 10 by 12, whatever, little few rows of food so that they even knew what real food tasted
right.
It's not even the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, when you take a tomato and you bite into it like an apple and it's like, oh, man, that's good. When the hell does that happen? Nothing's ever ripe. Nothing's ever really good, you know.
Even right here with these pigs I raised, so there's like some seasoning stuff there, which actually we've collected a lot of seasonings and all kinds of stuff because everybody who left gave me their, you know, open things of ketchup and paprika and whatever. They weren't bringing them home with them. So they're like, oh, do you put any seasoning on this? Do you use any salt? I go, why don't you try it? I go, I don't put anything on it. You know what I put on it? I put bacon grease on it. That's what I put on
it. There you go.
And
Donna just got us some chocolate chip something cookies of made yummy. Thank you, baby.
Yes, they look good. So everybody's like, you're right. This doesn't need any seasoning. And a girl I hired, the girl I hired to cook with me, Sarah, who did a really good job and just fantastic worker, the kind of people that I like in this community. That I like to come here. She's like, oh, so Jay, aren't you going to rub these in a little salt? I'm like, nah, if people want to they can do that. And me, I don't use seasoning on anything. So I'm just not into it. Like, I don't want to even I put a little salt.
I'm a big salt fan. It kind of helps with a lot of stuff.
But I put a little salt in my water when I'm sweating like crazy. That's about it.
Yeah.
So when I cook these pork chops and stuff, everybody's like, wow, these are the best pork chops I've ever had. But getting back to finishing the pigs.
Real pork chop.
So what I did with all the pigs that went to the USDA slaughterhouse is we finished them at Bardo Farm, and I was talking how Neil gets all the fruit and vegetables. So what Neil does for the pigs is he feeds them blueberries, strawberries, pineapples, pineapple rinds, apples, the carrots, the lettuce, the tomatoes, jars of pickles, just whatever, just all kinds of stuff. But literally these pigs are eating all they want for the last 45 days of their life of just fruit and vegetables. And they also get some, a little bit of grain, and they get some milk, and they get some.
Well, that has a lot of sugar. I mean, it's a lot of calories. But it's
natural calories.
Yeah,
natural sugar.
Yeah.
So when Neil takes these pigs, Neil can really finish a pig to taste really, really good because he has that. He puts 600-700 miles a week on a truck just going and gathering up all this stuff. All these grocery stores every day, he's going to pick up stuff at, all kinds of waste produce and stuff at grocery stores. So we're able to finish these pigs so well. These guys at the commercial level, they can't make meat like we can. They just can't because
it's just a big bucket of, protein powder, pellet of whatever the hell they dump in the trough thing.
And what these assholes do at the corporate farm level is, because they're raising pigs and they got all these pigs and they got this pig chain and whatever, they take like the stuff of the pigs or renderings that they can't market or do anything with. And what do they like to do? They like to feed it back to the goddamn animals, to the pigs. They like to feed bones back to the cows. And then you get the mad cow disease.
Right.
And it's like, and one of the things the only things my pigs don't get is pork. But we feed that to the chickens. And the chickens just tear it all apart. And the only thing I don't feed to the chickens is chickens. And then we just feed that to the pigs. That's another thing, too, what's really cool is so during the scamdemic last year, when they closed everything down, the local grocery store, they got a deal where, they put, 25 rotisserie chickens in a rotisserie thing. Well, at the end of the day, they got like, a dozen rotisserie chickens or 18 rotisserie chickens that they're going to throw out. So the lady who she would close up the store, she would bring me all these rotisserie chickens. She just dropped them off at the house.
Remote?
Yeah, I'm gonna have some in a minute. She would drop them off at the house, and so I had after about 3 or 4 days of feeding the piglets, they were still like 50 pounds at this point. We'd throw in like 8-10 rotisserie chickens, every day, and so like 6 of these piglets get out and they're running around and in the woods. So what do? I go over with one of these rotisserie chickens and they see I have the rotisserie chicken, and I like had to walk fast to keep them from like eating the chicken out of my hand. But by the time we got back to the pig pen, and then I take the rotisserie chicken and I throw it in the pig pen, and then they all run around the other side to where the hole was in the fence, and I saw where they got out.
There you go.
But so
I am smarter than you.
So they like really love meat, the pit meat and dairy. The pigs really like it. But when you can finish them on vegetables, so you don't have to add like this, what's that stuff, MSG, they like to put in everything that's factory farm so it tastes good, and all this salt and all these chemicals. And a lot of people's palates have been kind of damaged. So like the bacon that we smoked for people's pigs that we did, we just smoked it with wood. We just put some oak and maple that was green once we got a fire going and got a smoker house, and we smoked it, and when we smoke it, we just rub a little bit of salt on the bacon slab, just sea salt, both sides, And then we put it in a smoker house. And basically, once the meat gets to like 110 or 115 degrees, the smoking's done, and we take it out. And then we'd freeze it, and then we'd slice it in the bandsaw because we didn't have a meat slicer. There was a couple of people that we raised pigs that did not like the bacon. They're like, it tastes like campfire. Just a couple. But these were also people that their palates were, you know, just used to, you know, the
yeah, that's the one thing stuff. I can attest to is over the last probably 5 years or so, at least I should do it more often, but at least two or three times a year, I'll do a 3-day fast, you know, just water. Mm-hmm. And it's not, oh my God, you're not eating. I mean, it's really not that big
not
a deal,
at all.
You know,
nope.
If you just, you know, you're always going for the refrigerator and go, oh yeah, I'm fasting. You just close it. It's just a mental decision. You just make the switch. I'm not eating for 3 days. And I'm going, but man, that's going to be a hellacious burger, dinner, steak, New York strip or something on Friday. I mean, you know, that kind of thing. So, and the reason I do it, a lot of times it prompts me to do it is, you know, eating unhealthy.
Right.
You know, I just feel bad. It's at, definitely after the holidays. I mean, that, you know, it's January, you know, after New Year's Eve, man, it's, man, I need a 3-day fast because damn, you know.
Yep.
And so, and then maybe by the summer, maybe another time, if I'm just feeling bad or if I, you know, just get a lot of, like here normally I would do it after a pork fest because you're eating all kinds of crap and everything, but it's been a lot healthier this year.
Yeah.
Oh, you know, previous years when they started doing the juice caboose and everything, you know, it's like, oh my God, they're starting to eat better. I saw that. Okay. Here's a good example. 2008. Well, the point I wanted to make about the fasting is that your taste changes.
Yes.
You know, all of a sudden you're very, very, very sensitive to salt.
Mm-hmm.
Man, you can taste it. You put a little salt. Oh my God, man! And you, and it resets your taste buds or your whatever. And sugar, the same thing. Salt and sugar. It's a big jump. Oh my God, man! Don't be showing me the Snickers. Crap, man! I think I'd freaking blow up. I mean, I'd die or something from a sugar rush. But when you get away from all the junk and you're out of the processed, if it's a Mylar bag, cardboard box, or whatever, and I do that with my grandkids, I'm going, look, it's in a Mylar bag or a cardboard box, it's not good for you. So then I get called one year from my daughter-in-law just yelling at me because they went into the pantry and they go, oh, what are you trying to kill us? Look at and I'm going, hey, I'm sorry, I wasn't directing at you. I was just trying to, whatever. So anyway, we're all good. And she feeds them a lot better now. All the kids do. They really are taking this nutrition thing seriously. But when I would do a fast, it would be you're resetting everything.
Yes.
You know, and it's been my experience. The reason I did it was one year, a friend of mine's father, we were having a party, and it was right before, it was the weekend before Thanksgiving. It was like a Saturday night before Thanksgiving. I had a party there, and he really, you can tell, people that their complexion's bad, you know, they got all kinds. I mean, that's nutritional stuff, you know. And I go, you probably better off just to stop with all your medication, just stop eating for, you know. I said, you know, I'll do it. I don't know if he did it or not, because I'm sitting there convinced myself that I should do it. So I finally, and then it went to 7 days. Then I ate a little bit. It was like a 3-week thing. And I lost like 30 pounds, and I felt a lot better.
Mm-hmm.
And I should be doing that more often. But I did just, it was like 3 weeks ago I did a 3-day.
Yep.
You know, coming here, I'm like, I mean, I'm going to be able to fit in my shorts. Man, what the hell? I gotta get on it. So it's... not eating is not necessarily a bad thing. And when you do that and you reset, you come back to better foods and you start eating it. You see you eat less, you're spending less money, you're eating better, and you feel better.
And the thing is when you do what's called, I call it the normie diet, you know, the normies, normal people, the people who are getting vaccinated, the people who are, you know, wearing masks, you know, When you're doing eating the commercially available food, even the commercially available whole foods like the meat and stuff, there's a lot missing, and you're not getting everything. It's not nutritionally dense. Like my pigs, that pork and our beef is nutritionally dense because you know they're just doing what they're supposed to be doing, and so you're missing things. So we have a lot of malnourished people in America who are very fat.
Oh, yeah, that's sort of the point I was going to make. In 2008, this happened with Donna, you know, when I first started, you know, doing this. I go, but my body's telling me I'm missing something. I don't want to, like, just not eat. I mean, I'm missing something. There's something that I can tell. I'm missing something. But this is before I realized that they made sure you're missing something, you know?
Right.
And when I came to Porcupine Freedom Festival, since 08, there's two things that have changed a lot. One, there would be outside the pavilion, all the smokers would come out and smoke. There would be 50 people there smoking. It was just like a thing. Smoking is almost non-existent.
Yep.
I probably smoke more than anybody else, and I don't smoke. I mean, right. you know, Derek will have, I'll have a cigarette. I'm drinking whatever. I'll have a cigarette. I'll bum a cigarette at a cigarette. So I probably, you know, smoke a, I don't know, pack month or something like that. I mean, you know, but nobody else does. Smoking's like not a thing anymore, mm-hmm. you know? Then there's the weight.
Yep.
And you would see everybody, you and I are probably the bigger guys, mm-hmm. you know, and it used to be, and I know because of all the t-shirt sizes that we would do, it would be, you know, double XL, XL, large, XL, XL. Then it got to where, you know, it's medium.
Yep.
Large, medium, small, medium, the way it used to be. And people are getting leaner. The children in the Liberty community, rarely do you see the fatty.
Yep.
I mean, you know, that's that's like a product of, you know, their system, the man, the public, government school, whatever the hell it is. But in the Liberty community, look at all these kids out here.
Right.
They're out here in the rain running around playing with, you know, they have a soccer, a volleyball, a football, a wolf football. I mean, I think they got every ball they've been doing this.
That's great.
And in the rain. And it's been good to see that the Liberty community is healthier.
Mm-hmm.
They eat better. They understand. They're starting to take the self-sufficiency thing seriously in what they preserve and how they prepare their preserves and what food that they're doing and how they're doing hygiene products. That's a big thing. Like, you know, the silver doctor here, you know, Mike Swatek out doing this silver stuff, man, he's been making bank. They're just, man, you got the good stuff. Boom. You know, and I endorse it. I use it all the time.
Yeah, I'm gonna spend a couple hundred bucks with Mike before we leave, because that PPM silver cream is freaking amazing.
I think I left you some of that or something.
You did.
Time, didn't
you? You left me some.
I go, watch this.
I bought some. You're the one who really turned me on to it, because you're like, oh yeah, this is great. Because so my left elbow hangs out of the truck a lot, and the sun hits it a lot, and I get a lot, and it, like, it's dry and itchy and, like, and for years it's been kind of like an issue. And
starting,
like,
to get to be a thing, yeah.
And it's just, but the thing that works the best is his, you know, 500 ppm silver cream that comes in a little, you know, 2 ounce whatever. And I'm like, Mike, I want to buy $100 worth of those, and I want to buy another $100 worth. He's like, okay, I'll hold on, you know. And this is a great
product. I got literally in my med kit, they have three of those.
Yep.
I got like three or four of them around the bus. Mm-hmm. One's by the bed. I use that stuff so much on any and everything.
Yep.
I just want it convenient because it's first aid of anything, a rash. Yep. Some people have, you know, sunburn. Oregano oil works for some different stuff. But the silver thing, I use the silver stuff. I get a sore throat. I spray it in my throat. Problem solved. You know, I haven't got sick in
years. This is not medical advice, but I'm going to mix it with...
Mine's medical advice, okay? Shoot my ass. Whatever.
Yeah, let's get this the evidence on the record.
I am using it for, you know, medicinal purposes of... But that's me. Am I free? Can I use it for whatever the hell I want and share what I did? Now, what you do, you know, ask your witch doctor. I don't care,
So I'm gonna put a little ivermectin mixing in with the ivermectin paste in with the PPM silver, and because like Dr. Judy told me to, and you know, well, she didn't tell me to put it with the silver, but I was just thinking, like, you know, I could do that, because I just my brother, actually, he was just like, hey, I'm gonna buy a case of ivermectin, but I only need like part of them, you want them? And so he just bought a case of ivermectin.
Well, ivermectin is it's been very effective against these protein spike protein COVID, blah, 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 whatever, which is why they go after it so hard.
Right.
Hydroxychloroquine, ivermectin. I mean, this has been like, you know, really having a lot of good impact for the same reasons because of the way it works. And come to find out, you know, Jay's on and Dr. Judy was on and you're going, we use that all the time on horses.
Yep.
You go down to the feed store, you can buy it by the freaking case,
yep.
you know? And so you're going, well, it's the same stuff and I could put a paste and we're cured.
So a quick side note, ivermectin, I used to buy it from a guy in New Holland, Pennsylvania. So a tube does a 1,000-pound horse, one tube.
And that costs how much?
$3.
Ah!
Well, right? Well, so I would go buy a case.
Oh, man, so toast.
And well, this was $3 like 5-6 years ago. So my brother met up with the same guy the other day. And I think he told me it was $12 to buy a tube to buy. And he basically said in the past year, it's just gone crazy in price. But just like Dr. Judy said, they're trying to keep that away from us. They're trying to keep the meat away from us. They're trying to keep all of our healing medicines away from us. They're trying to keep the bullets away from us. They're, you know, everything is...
You're going
to
turn blue from silver.
Everything is that. But, hey, one thing I want to plug before I do forget, Ernie, is... So Luke Radowski and Silver Dave are good friends of mine. And so we've been partnering up on some projects to help people live without government. So it's, I believe... If you go to wearechange.org, and don't quote me on everything I tell you right now, but we're going to do a survival apocalypse training, and you might actually be there.
Well, hell, I thought that's what you've been doing.
Well, so no, we're doing
in pieces.
We're doing it, but we're doing a 3-day thing. So it's going to be a survival apocalypse training, and part of it is going to be we're going to do a pig roast also. So on day one, we're going to shoot a pig, and we're going to gut it, and then we're going to do all the things we need to do to prep the pig for a pig roast. Day two, we're going to debone the pig, and I got to make sure that guy's going to come and help. Who taught me how to debone pigs? He's really good. Ian Underwood, you've talked to him before. And then on day three, you know, and then we'll after we debone the pig and pack it with the stuffing, you know, the night before we're going to put it in the cooker. So on Sunday, which is the 18th of July, which is gun church, we're also going to have a pig roast after gun church. But the survival apocalypse training is going to be a Friday and Saturday. So I don't know if we're going to do anything with chickens. You know, last year we did a couple where people butchered their own chickens. But Luke Radowski of wearechange.org has all the info on it and how to sign up and everything on his site. So if people want to check that out and they want to, you know, come to my property and, you know.
You know, that was an amazing transformation to watch. You know, Luke's a young guy. I mean, he's mid-30s or something like that. And I remember him being a teenager, 17-year-old kid, 9/11 in New York of my friends died in New Lion Sacks. It's not. I mean, that's what We Are Change was. So by the time we got into, you know, the Levolution, he had already had, an impact. And, and we had him on the show. I'm giving him crap for calling it the Cornholio disease. And, ask your doctor. I mean, shut up. Him and Tim Pool are just, sucking it up to the man. But, you know, they want to be able to expose themselves and these ideas to a wider audience and not get defunded, whatever their excuse is. They makes them feel better at night. But anyway, so I don't care. You know, I'm glad you're doing that. But he was in his bubble in Brooklyn in New York, all locked down, freaking out. Last year when he came to Porkfest, a year ago, he comes here and he's like, oh, no, Ernie's wanting to hug all over me. You know, no, elbow, man. Oh, yeah. It's I go, shut up.
Yeah.
Get your butt over here. By the end of Porkfest, I'm just slobbering all over him anyway. But, you know.
Same thing with me. I'm like, hey, babe, bro, can I get a hug? He's like, how about fist bump?
It's like lighten up. So, and which is, you know, kind of the stuff that needs to be done anyway. So it's, but what he did is he finally started to kind of, you know, come out of the shell a little bit. He just kind of seriously, because nobody here, because he's used to New York. Everybody was freaked out. And, you know, it looked like a zombie apocalypse. Nobody on the street.
Yeah.
A psyop big time. This had to be, and it was that way. Right before when we went to Arizona, Derek and I, we took the bus back there. We were, finished with some stuff up here, going back there. When we went there, it was the bus and 18-wheelers on the road, and that was it.
Yep.
You know, every now and then you would see a you know, a passenger car. But it was freaky. You would go through cities, nothing.
And that's the way Orwell explained it would be. Only certain people would be able to travel between the cities and whatever. And, you know, and basically the idea of this, you know, all these utopian movies, you see like the roads are all commercial traffic, right. You know, and
it was freaky. I was like going, wow, man, this is people that what? Well, they give them the 2 weeks, you know, but then 2 weeks turned into 2 years, you know, that kind of crap. Well, you know, Luke was caught up in the middle of that. Mm-hmm. Tatiana was that way too. Oh, five really? Months in her in her apartment in New Jersey of, oh my God. So
glad he got out of the city.
Well, when he came up here, he left. We stayed with his family, mm-hmm. and they had a place. So he came up here. He saw all the RVs and the bus, and he's like, it isn't that bad, you know. Maybe so. Then he rented nice RV from Taryn. He stayed at your place. He was looking. So finally, you know, crypto does well or something, whatever. He had resources, and he gets a big fifth wheel. Oh my God! He got his 2500 Ram, you know, super diesel, you know, and then he puts chrome plated testicles under the hitch. I'm like, seriously?
He's such a city kid.
You know, I'm like, really? And anyway, so then he starts getting all gunned up. Well, he does Silver Dave, you know, takes him out the gun range.
Yep.
He starts to, man, he's all, man, he, he really embraced that. And then we were doing a lot of welding. He's going to Jay's man camp, you know. So we were teaching him how to do, you know, like he never touched a power drill before. He didn't know what the hell a freaking circular saw of a welding, whatever. So, and then Jay's always, you just get on the backhoe, you'll figure it out.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm going, after he goes through walls of what. So I go out with Luke a little bit, and I'm like, all right, this lever does. And I spent 5 minutes with him, you know, just all right, then peace out, let me get out of the way, you know. So Jay's really good about that, let people just, you know, learn it and hopefully not break too much stuff. But if they do, the kind of people that kind of, they fix it and pay for it.
Sure,
and
whatever.
So Luke really, in a short period of time, I would say within a month or two, he was sucking it up.
Yep.
But he also saw, you know, it's like coolness factor for his channel too. You know, he's like, watch what I'm doing.
But Luke's one of these guys, like, you know, he's a city kid, but also he's a mentality where, you know, the man can do anything. And he just needs to be in a situation to where, you know, if he has to do it, it's going to get done. Now, he would rather probably hire someone to do it, but he was like, before we left, you know, we spent a whole day going through the whole camper, you know, checking out air pressure, showing them how to, like, you know the brakes work and adjust the brakes. And we packed wheel bearings and, you know, and we with grease, and just because I want
to do it.
Oh, yeah. He's not afraid to get dirty. He isn't.
Oh, he was trying to do, I don't know, Tom Sawyer whitewashing crap, me putting on those LEDs on the front of his truck and me get under it. I go, hell no, you do it. Well, it's just going to sit there. Paint my truck. I don't give a shit.
Yeah.
Finally, he got into it. You know, he didn't want to, like, turn wrenches if he didn't have to.
He does understand that he, like, needs to know the nuts and bolts and things on how things work. Because one of the biggest survivalist issues the biggest issue people are going to have, and it's happening now, is their cars, their transportation.
Right.
People need to learn how to be their own mechanics. They need to learn how to change their brakes. Because my buddy over here has got, that's one thing. Yeah, I did, I think, $700 worth of repair work at Porkfest for just people here needing shit fixed.
Yeah, I saw you, man. You're like, you know, mechanic day J, hoods are up and parts are out on the table. Well, what the hell is up with that?
Well, one guy, the alternator quit on his car, and he's a friend of mine. And then and as we're doing the alternator, you know, we got the belt off and we're, you know, in there, and I see the fan is all sloppy. So the water pump was, it didn't start leaking, but the bearing was bad on the water pump. So we replaced the water pump the next day. And when I said to him, he's another guy, he's like, pretty competent, but he just assumed, you know, not really do it. And I'm like, listen, we'll get it done, but, you know, you got to do it. I'll just help you because I got other shit going on and I got, you know, things to fix.
Okay, this boat goes there, do that.
Correct. And I didn't really, you know.
And we had the tools.
Him and I took it to park together and he put it all together. And basically the only thing he needed help with was kind of a job where, like, you need another third hand in there. And so somebody I was like, hey, Michael, this guy, Michael, Gordon's friend of ours. He's fairly handy. I'm like, hey, Michael, can you give him a hand? And they walked over there for 2 minutes, and the guy was all done.
Anybody needs tools, they're coming over here, because, man, I got every freaking tool ever imagined underneath this bus.
And which
I'm afraid
is good.
To take anything out.
Which is good. And, you can fix almost anything you can, anything you need, you know, with the exception of a blown motor possibly, but you can get yourself going in most any situation because you got a bunch of tools.
And have been.
And have been. Yeah. And you've learned a lot about this thing.
Yeah.
So now, what was I getting to?
Well, you had other repairs. It wasn't just his car. Was there other stuff?
So there
was. I mean, he did, $700-$800 for just that.
So there was an RV that the steps wouldn't work on, and like the woman is like, I don't know, she's probably in her 50s, and you know, doesn't need it. Taryn's RV, the steps quit working for some reason. So I took it all apart, and what it was, the electric motor was like jammed up or something, and I got it fixed. But I gave her the internet link to basically a brand new electric motor. I said, hey, buy this $80 part. That's what it costs for your electric steps to go in and out. And we're gonna have to do this later. And I was and like, for example, I worked on it for, I don't know, I put like 2 hours into it, and I'm like, here and there, and I got it going. And but I told the lady $150. Now I usually charge like $125 an hour. is my labor rate now, and I'm only working on stuff for friends because I just and then I was at $75 an hour, but I got mountains of work at 70. I still got a few $75 an hour jobs to finish when I get home, and then even I do $250 an hour if you like it's an emergency job. And this winter I had some broken equipment. You're like, if you want me to work on it right now, it's $250 an hour. And they're like, I need this thing running tomorrow, please, thank you. And like Caterpillar, for example, the one of the things I work on is a Caterpillar excavator for a guy. It was a skid steer, but Caterpillar this winter they were backed up, and they still are. They were like, oh yeah, well, 3 months we can look at it. So another thing is, oh, so the lady, I charge her $150, and she's got a whole bunch of crystals, and. I send my wife over there. She's vending crystals and rocks and stuff. And my wife sends that stuff. And I say, go tell her, $150 worth of merchandise. And when my wife shows up, she goes, $150? No, no, you're getting $300 worth of cash or crystal or whatever you want. You know, she goes, I called the RV place and it was going to cost $1,000 to get that thing fixed. Mm-hmm. And they couldn't do it for, 6 weeks.
All right.
And so there was an article on Freedom's Phoenix I read a few mornings ago that said right now that the automotive fleet in America, all the cars in America, are oldest in history, 12 years old. My truck is 23 years old.
Well, I'm glad to see, one, they are better. They've been getting better just out of necessity. But, of course, they got, freaking computers coming out their ass, and overnight that could go bad. But and I have my kids are mechanics. I mean, yep. They've learned up. And my son-in-law is a trained mechanic. That's his thing. But now, so that parlayed into Nikola. He's working for the Nikola truck thing. And then when my other son's left Honeywell to go over there too. Well, what gives them these skills and stuff is like they went to man camp their whole life. Yeah. And then they learned stuff. So I'm like,
Well, see, because you had them helping, getting greasy with you, changing a wheel.
5-6 years old.
Right.
And dude, this is how you do it.
Same thing with Cypress. She's helping me just do whatever. And all the time, unless it's going to be dangerous and it hurts her, then I don't do it with her. But pretty much anything where she's not going to get hurt, and getting grease all over her hands and her face isn't getting hurt as far as I'm concerned. But the thing is the most trouble people are going to get into just in general with there being a labor crisis is they're not going to be able to fix their own car. And 90% of automotive issues is because they didn't check the oil and it ran low on oil, or they didn't replace the brakes, and now they drove the brake pads through the rotors, and now they got to put rotors and calipers, and now it's instead of $38 worth of brakes, it's $400 worth of parts, and instead of it being $200 for the mechanic to do it, now it's $2,000 for the mechanic to do it. And another truck I worked on here is a diesel truck, Sean Grissom. He's a big vendor. He used to work in the carny world, and he sets up food trucks all over the place. So he's very dependent on his trucks. Both of his trucks broke down here. We did a starter in one truck, and the other one we found an electrical wire broke. But the Ford truck, he brought it down to the diesel truck. He brought it to the dealership 20 miles away, and they plug it in the computer, and he says, and they say, we can't fix this thing because the computer doesn't tell us what's wrong. And
oh, well, hell. You know, I guess you can't be fixing it.
And they charge him $100 to spend, you know, 5 minutes looking through the computer, and there's no codes on the computer. And they're like, and if it had a code, he said, he goes, it's going to sit in the parking lot for 2 weeks. He goes, and that's only if we just need to, like, replace the sensor. He goes, I don't even have I can't pull it in anywhere. He goes, I don't have enough guys. And he goes and looks in the shop, and he was telling me that there is, he goes, there's got to be 10 bays in there. And he says it was, like, you know, Tuesday at, like, you know, 11 o'clock in the morning, and they got, like,
one guy working.
They have four mechanics, and they have 10 bays. And he's like, and the guy running the dealership says, we are immediately hiring, you know,
warm bodies.
We need 10 mechanics. You know, we need, you know, this guy, that guy, blah, 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 you know, parts guys, this thing. And the manager is also running the parts counter because they ain't got no one to do, you know, sit there and operate the parts. And the service manager, so he's doing like three jobs. And the thing is, so you literally can't get your car fixed, and certain things just not getting done. And the mechanics are really fussy. So if you got like something that's like a basket case, they're not even going to touch it. And so that's where I come in with a lot of my friends. And then what I'm doing with my buddies, I'm like, well, you know, I source a lot of work out to some other guys I know. So there's a couple other Free Stater guys that I let them, they're just working out of their garages, and I just send them work, like stuff they can handle, like brakes on the Camry.
I would hate that because I'm from Arizona, and every freaking nut and bolt is rusted to something.
Yeah.
Hate that. I hate it. You know, I get this crap out of my face, but there is a demand for mechanics.
Yes.
And with the older fleet, you know, and I've seen, you know, Jay, he's just overwhelmed. When I come in, I'm like, all right, all this other stuff you want, you know, point the tractor, what you want plowed, what do you want moved, what do you want cleaned up, what I'll help because, you know, I'll help. And but there's tons of stuff. This excavator needs a track. This thing needs to be picked. This engine needs to be done. We're waiting on a, you know, a hydraulic line of this, of the, you know, the blah, 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 and Ernie, and then I'll go drive 60 miles to go get the little part for the bus, the kind of the whatever.
Oh, yeah, you're a tremendous help.
It's constant J. And then some of the guys that are there, they're always just wanting to talk to Jay. And of course, Jay's going to explain it to him, which is going to take another hour. So I'm just like, Jay, I go, Jay's dead, man. Leave Jay alone. Jay needs to work.
I put my headphones on. And so everybody knows when I got my headphones on, not to bother me unless it's like important. But like what gets to me is like, so for the jobs that I will not say no to, for example, one of my friends.
It's always somebody's wife or family exactly. That's got their exactly. SUV that I need exactly. And the kids, and Jay's always there to help.
Yep. Like my one buddy, they got a minivan, and the wheels are grinding really bad, and it needs an inspection sticker, and there's a hole in the exhaust, and they got one car, and they got three kids, and his mom and dad, and like
Jay,
and I'm like, and they're good people, so like, you know what I've done with these. This particular people, I'm like, all right, drop your car off for work, take my truck to work, and, you know, because the guy's got to go to work, and, like, you know, and his wife usually drops him off at work while she goes out and does shit, you know, because that's what they got to do when they're living in the city, and, like, they got no problem, you know, throwing $1,000 at their car. There's just nobody can work on it, and all the mechanics are busy, and a lot of these guys are freaking just robbing people, and they can get away with robbing people, too, because, like, you know, it's just people don't know.
And yeah, I know. So, I've had problems. We had, you know, for months they had the bus. 7,000 miles later, the engine took a dump.
Yep. Oh, that outfit that did your bus, they're actually building a second garage right outside of town here somewhere, a second repair shop.
Up here?
Up here, right outside of Lancaster. I seen a guy with a TMS t-shirt, and I go, oh, you got work? He goes, no, they're right over. I forget what town he said, but we were at O'Reilly's.
Take a bus by and say, give me a steak dinner or something.
Something. Something. I don't know. But anyways, so like.
Because we're still within the year warranty.
So like this husband and wife couple, their computer guys, they really don't know how to work. They're just intimidated about like working on a car. And it was like one of these situations where like I would really like him to, the husband or the wife, the kids are pretty young, to like work on it with me so they like understand what the hell's going on, but mm-hmm. they just couldn't do it. So like I took care of it for them, you know, it took a whole day. And but like they're like very like desperately needing you know, they can't, that's their lifeline is their car, and they have no idea how to really keep it up, how to maintain it, which is, if they had understand, and she goes, wow, I didn't really know if that I didn't do my brakes, because basically
it stopped.
It just got to the point where she couldn't, it was felt unsafe for her to drive. And it was, you know, it was shaking, it was rattling, it was all kinds of noises coming out. And I would step on the brakes, there's sparks coming out from the wheels because, you know, but she,
I know.
She had no clue. Nobody ever taught her. And I talked to her a lot. The husband, he's a computer programmer, so he's very busy. And they are, you know, oh, and another thing is he was just going to go buy a new minivan. A new minivan was like $47,000 and there's none in stock. For a minivan, he was, you know, this was 8 weeks ago, you know, I helped him out. And so and I said to those guys, they go, listen, let's get your kids, you know, when they're a little older, man camping. Let's get them in. So they're, and one of the man camp things we're going to do is we're just going to be changing out brakes. You know, it's easy. Anybody, you know,
first thing like I did, my oldest daughter, she was 16, 17. She bought a little Dodge Neon. She had to have that car. Financed it, yeah, you know, yeah. Got mom to co-sign. I'm like, hell no, that old piece of crap. You need to get a whatever.
Yep.
So she got it. And then, you know, she's grinding brakes.
Sure.
And I go, guess what we're doing today, you know? So we go out and take it, because disc brakes are freaking butt simple, you know? And
they're butt simple if you replace them before you trash them.
Right. So we did that, you know, and the boys all always knew, and they just grew up with this. I had them there all the time. So when they had cars and they wanted to do stuff, they at least had the confidence to do it.
Yep.
Like one of my sons, he has, you know, a diesel. Yeah. I think it's a Ram.
Yep.
And
similar to Luke's truck.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. It's almost identical. And there was something to do with the turbo, you know, and then you got a program. There's a electronic thing. You have to set the turbo.
Yep.
And that costs like thousands of dollars for that thing.
Mm-hmm.
Or you can have him do it. So basically what it came down to, if he did all the work, it cost about the same, but he'd get this machine.
Yeah.
So he goes, okay, well, he does it. So then he's got a bunch of other friends or people that knows, and they let him use the machine and judge. So he's made his money back just on letting him use the machine.
And he knows how it works. And when it screws up on a Sunday, he just fixes the darn thing.
And his father-in-law had the same problem on the same truck. So who's the hero now, you know?
Yep. So, that's one of the biggest survivalist things I think people need to, because in a modern, like right now in New Hampshire, you know, they, you know, like a lot of people's biggest problems is their cars. That's their biggest struggle is their car. And most people, most Americans, their most valuable asset is their car. A lot of people don't own houses. They're living in apartments and their most valuable asset is their car. I mean, you know, this family's probably most valuable asset is their minivan. And it's not an old minivan. They just run it 7 days a week. And it's like, I'm like, listen, the wife's actually going to do her own oil changes.
How old is she?
They're in their mid-30s, you know. They're just...
It's time.
And I'm like, you just do your own oil changes and you know, check your tire pressure. You don't know how often I'm like...
They're almost tire flat blows. Tires.
I'm like... That, like, I saw a girl at O'Reilly's the other day. I'm working on my friend's truck. I go, hey, your front left tire is dangerously low. She goes, well, I got 3 more hours of driving to do. I go, you need to go somewhere right now and fill up that tire. You're going to create an accident. And she goes, oh, you're serious. I says, yes. Thank you very much, she says. And, you know, because when you have a blowout on the highway, and nobody ever expects it to happen, it's a very, you know, can be a bad situation. And it's easy to avoid. Put air in your tire.
Yeah, low pressure, it heats it up, it gets really, and boom, it blows. That's why you have blowouts, they're just low pressure.
And the major low blowouts I see here in New England is when it gets really, really cold, like in January, it gets to like minus 15 one night, so all that air condenses into moisture, and it doesn't expand when it warms back up a little bit. And that's when you'll see, like, around here, I used to drive to Quebec like 3 times a week all winter long, getting hay for, you know, from 1998 to 2008, I drove to Quebec a lot. And when it would first get cold, I just see so many cars on the side of the road blown tires because because the air condenses and you lose the air pressure. And then what happens is the sidewall ripples when it touches that, where the tire touches the ground, and it straightens back out up top. And just like you take a piece of electric fence wire and goes,
it's hot,
bend it, it gets hot and it comes apart. So, the short term goal is to start getting some of these 8, 9, and 10 year olds who want something to do, Turner wrenches. So like when they're, you know, you can be a mechanic when you're 12. I've met a lot of them, and you know, and you can be very valuable at 12, 13 years old.
You know, they had auto shop when I was a kid in high school, and I remember, you know, my friends and I, we all worked on our own cars.
Yes.
And but back then, of course, it was, you know, the Chevelle Super Sport with a 327 and as a carburetor, and the most, you know, electronic thing and whole damn thing was the AM radio.
Right.
But you learned fundamentals. And my dad, you know, he owned the service station and he was an automotive guy. And, you know, he always grew up in around cars. And he goes, it's fuel, timing, and there's three things. Ignition.
Yeah.
Fuel, spark, timing, ignition.
Fuel, spark, compression.
Right. What?
And and timing and spark are the same thing.
So when if you look at it something basic like that, you know, then you can kind of, okay, you diagnose. Well, now it's, oh my God, it's some freaking God knows what wire of it not allowed. And then there's diesel. Diesel's become a thing. So, and you're Mr. Diesel, you know, so it's all about diesel. And I didn't know with valves, this is a two-stroke engine.
Yep.
You know, with valves. I'm like, how the hell does that even work?
Only exhaust valves.
Yeah, but I mean, you know, whatever. I had to watch a video to know how it even freaking works. But the this whole thing that we've been talking about has generally been self-sustaining and sharing that information for Generation Next. You know, this is something that we need to, you know, take seriously and offer this. And Jay is where? What is that?
There's somebody's cell phone in this bicycle back here.
Oh,
want me to look for it?
No, never mind. Thomas, it'll shut up one day. It's over here, Thomas. Whatever it is. But the by doing, setting the example, archiving this, putting it up, it's one of the reasons why Derek and I know this is going to be, if not super popular, sure as hell super necessary. And for the Liberty community to be able to feed themselves and maintain, you're big on maintenance, you know, make sure it keeps going. And you're also about bush fixes too. I mean, you know, I freaking baling wire and Scotch tape and glue, and I'll get your A-10 airplane in the fight. I mean, you know, whatever.
Yep.
And so this kind of can do Yankee ingenuity. We can make it happen. Don't worry about it. We'll feed ourselves. Needs to be the norm.
Yes.
You know, it needs to be, you know, kind of transferred to Generation X thing, the confidence. And that's one thing that Jay always goes on about is he goes, you know, the opposite of fear is confidence.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you need to know what about something. I mean, you, then you're not afraid because you know how to do something. And I don't want to pick on Luke Radowski because, you know, he's manned up and came out and he learned and one of the few guys that really took it seriously and, you know, and is bettering himself. But, man, if he wasn't a neon flashing example.
Right, I mean,
we used to make fun of him. And we love Luke, but I was just going, seriously? Man, you need to get your ass out of Brooklyn like 10 years ago.
Right. Even he said several times, he's been like, ah, I don't know why I waited so long to move out of the city. But, you know, that's what he knew. That was his comfort zone.
Well, now it's changing, and he's become, you know, way more valuable than just a celebrity and an influencer on YouTube. Now he's actual, you know, somebody that make a good husband and father and community member other than I know how to do video. I mean, you know, you need to really be, because he took it on. Mm-hmm. You got this big ass, you know, fifth wheel pop out with all the goodies of whatever and a diesel truck. If I need to keep it going, you know, stocked up with, you know, food growing stuff and guns. Yep. I mean, you, within a year, he's changed a great deal, and that is the example. And I'm sure he's had that example set and an inspiration to his audience, which has been awesome, which makes him more valuable to – he goes and hangs out with guys like Tim Pool all the time and everything. You know, Luke, the man, you know, we got – you know, so it's good to see this happen. We need to replicate it. And Jay's going to help with that. Derek's going to make sure the IT is done, and I'm doing whatever I can to help fill in the gaps for Jay to be able to share this stuff because we need it.
Another thing about Luke, he's wicked good with kids. I would have no problem, like, if I needed to, like, go somewhere and do something, like, some kind of thing, I couldn't bring Cypress with me and Shannon wasn't around, I could just take the diaper bag and say, hey, Luke, just you watch Cypress for, like, a day? And I wouldn't be worried about him. Now, I don't know how well he's going to do changing diapers, but he's really good. He's really good with the kids. He's definitely going to be – he's going to make a good dad someday.
Well, he's got him. And dogs like him. He's got his dog, Atlas. Yep. You know, she's a beautiful German Shepherd something, you know. But, I mean, you can't just say German Shepherd anymore. It's got to be, you know, freaking what county they got born in or something. but beautiful dog. Sweet, nice, capable. Got a little – you know, backpack forward, carry around his crap. He's got a satellite GPS navigation to find her. I mean, he took serious his jaw dog, you know?
Yeah. So, Porkfest. So I sold, so last year I bought piglets.
Hold on a second. Okay, so Porkfest, you know, you're coming up and you had the, you know, the grill, and you got trailers full and trucks full of stuff, and you set it up and going to make some money, and you got your, the freezer.
Truck freezer, yeah.
Yeah. You got to talk about that. We saw when the Juice Caboose came up here, I remember he built this, and it was way heavy. He built that thing 2x4 of, oh, my God. And then you have Zoe's pizza thing. They went aluminum, you know, so they got it, you know, all this stuff, everything. He ordered aluminum rail, track, unistrut, or whatever the hell, aluminum, built whatever you wanted. So that, excuse me, worked out well. Well, the Juice Caboose had a room that was probably like, you know, 8 feet tall, you know, 3x4 or something. It was like a little walk-in refrigerator cooler thing, and it was really cold in there, and it was hot out. I'm like, how the hell did you do that? Well, he insulated it really well, and then he took a window shaker air conditioner, and there's something you can do instead of it going low to 60, you can get it to go even lower.
Right.
So the fact that he did that, I'm going, oh man, that's cooler than shit. Well, here comes Jay. He's like, I'll up the crap out of that. Let me show you something. Tell people what you did and what you use it for.
So I actually do have a refrigerated truck that I bought, but I got to go get it, and it's like 7 hours away, and it's going to be a couple day deal. Because it's not too far from my grandmother's house, and I gotta bring the family to hang out with grandma, and I gotta, you know, because she wants to see the babies and she hasn't seen them yet. My grandmother, they're on Cape Cod, Massachusetts. So, anyways, and I got a trailer this thing back, and it needs some work, but I haven't gotten around to it. So, you know, 3 months ago, we were gonna rent a refrigerated truck, and I could only get it for one day, and I had to get it, and it was between, I had to pick it up at 8 a.m. or 8:30. And drop it off before 4:30. Well, I can't even do the run in that timeline to go get the meat and bring it to where it's got to go, because I'm picking up 10 pigs worth of meat at a time or 5 cows worth of meat. And it was going to be like almost $2,000. I forget the exact number, but basically to use this truck. So I was like, you know what?
$2,000, I can build one, man.
So I've been working on my house. You know, so my brother runs around to these auctions, and I'm like, hey, any plywood, anything you see, plywood, buy me plywood. So he bought me these stacks of plywood. It's a 4x8 sheet of 3/4-inch plywood, and it's 2x4s around, and it was an old stage. And the only reason I know it was an old stage, because it was like stage number, blah, 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 written on it. So, and it was all kept inside and dry. I got like 30 of these things. I gave my brother like $8 a piece for them. He paid $3 a piece for them, give him a little profit. Yeah, I mean, 3/4-inch piece of plywood is $110 right now, or $140. So then when I bought the house, there was freezer panels that I didn't throw out. You know, when I first bought the house, I rented a 30-yard dumpster and just filled it up like twice. You know, when I bought the property, there's a lot of shit there. And so then I so basically I made this freezer thing, and it's another thing I took videos and pictures of us building it. And so I made a truck bed freezer out of these. The only thing I bought was the hinges I welded on the door to make the door. And or recently bought was the hinges and then the defrost timer. So all the controllers and everything I kind of had laying around, because I bought like extra ones because I was using them for different stuff, and like, you know, some of them I couldn't find them, so I just bought more. They're like $13 a piece on Amazon. Inkbird CS1000, they're called. There's simple heating or cooling controller. very easy to use. And then my house, I don't even have a window. I can put an air conditioner in my house. And actually, I got one now. But basically, you know, so I had some air conditioners we hadn't used in a couple of years is sitting in the storage. So I used those. And then I used all the wire, everything I had laying around, the EPDM rubber, all this stuff. So I made this thing.
EPDM rubber, what does that mean?
EPDM is electropolymer something membrane, I think it stands for. But it's basically what's on the roof of most modern campers. And it's like the stuff that I put on my house, the EPDM rubber. And because I did a rubber roofing on my house, I had a lot of rubber left over.
So it's like mil thick yep. rubber pond.
Yes, exactly.
Coating
yep.
inner tube.
Yes, yes.
It's like an it's like a big flat inner tube.
Yep. So yeah, it comes in 10-foot rolls of stuff I had.
Okay.
So these panels are 4x8 panels that I built everything out of. So I made a cooler that I wanted to be able to pick it, a freezer. I wanted to be able to pick it up and put it in the forklift, put it in the pickup truck with the forklift. Right now I got it on a trailer. So it's 8 foot 1 inches long. I really wish I made it just 8 foot long, so I can't close the bed tailgate on my truck.
Oh.
But I'm not sure I'd be able to fit the last row of boxes in if it was like an inch, because I measured it. So the boxes, I built it around the boxes from the slaughterhouse that we get.
Yeah.
So I can go 3 boxes wide, and I can go 5 boxes tall, and I can go, I think, 6 boxes deep. I don't think I'd be able to get to 6 boxes deep if I made it a little shorter. Big deal. I got to leave the tailgate open or take it off truck. So I have, I used two 5,000 BTU window air conditioners, like right here in Shaw's, you can buy them for $139. At Walmart, you can buy them for $99. And what I did is there's a thermostatic control, and I just took that thermostatic control that's in there and I just ran a jumper wire. So it's always that circuit's always closed. So it's just telling it to always be on whenever it's powered. And then you just plug it into an outlet I have on the side of my freezer. And what controls that outlet is two different things. First thing that controls all the power is a defrost timer. So it's a mechanical timer that just winds around.
It's like a hot water heater timer or pool timer.
Right.
And yep. It has, you know, on off little switches. I used them for my miners right. and yep. stuff like that.
Yep.
So you just have, it goes on, and some of them are digital and some of them are mechanical.
Yeah, I got that mechanical.
Yeah, that's a mechanical one. And I would program it and it would go on at this time, off at this time, yep. and which day or whatever. So what you did is you have it, it's always on, but then it goes off every, how often for how long?
So you can set it however you want. So the defrost, I'll just explain before I get into the defrost timer. So the defrost timer, what it does is when it's in cool, it closes the circuit that goes to cool, and it goes to the Inkbird controller. The Inkbird controller, I have it set, so like basically it turns on at 15 degrees and it shuts off at 10 degrees in the cooler. And then when a defrost timer, what that does is as these coolers are running, because we're going sub freezing temperature, the evaporator, which is the cold side of the air conditioning unit, ends up, getting ice all over it because it gathers the moisture and it freezes. And then it doesn't freeze anymore. The air doesn't circulate through it. And you actually start seeing the temperature climb in the unit. So what happens is right now I got it set. So at every 2 hours, the defrost timer comes on for 18 minutes. I can set it to come on every 12 hours or
every 2 hours.
Well,
it's not just it turns it off. It turns on a 700 watt heater.
Right. So it turns on a 700 watt heating element that I basically have, you know, just with a couple of some electric fence wire, you know, that we keep the pigs in with. Just holding it against the evaporator, so it defrosts the evaporator. Now, like yesterday when it was really warm, and it wasn't warm, it was just wicked muggy. I mean, you could cut the humidity with a knife yesterday and the day before. Like the 2 hours wasn't quite enough, and you'd start hearing a little freezer's knock.
Yeah, because fan rattling up against the ice or something.
Because the fans would get ice on them, and it would just start whacking the piece of styrofoam. It was just a little plastic fan. It was obnoxious. So I had to like advance the defrost timer a little bit or go out there and knock that. What I did is I made it defrost for 24 minutes instead of 18. I knocked it back down to 18 last night when it cooled off. So then when it starts defrosting, you get all this water that just runs out of it. But it's worked really good. We've been using the thing for 3 months. And actually the problem I had here.
Well, you have two. You don't have just one. Do they both defrost at the same time, or does one alternate? Or
they both defrost at the same time. I would have to run to make it alternate. Would have just took a little, you can do it, but I made it so it all
worked. Yeah, because brain damage.
Right, and I have it so I could literally just go to pull a unit out, go to Walmart, stick the new unit in from the outside, and just plug it in. And screw it in and just tape it up and put some insulation around it. I could probably do it in like 15 minutes, swap a unit out. Well, probably 5 minutes do the actual swap part.
We also have temperature meters on there so you can see what the temperatures are.
Yes, yeah, those are the
expert
things.
You have the timer. You have. So who did all that electrical and mapped that out? You just like, this is what I'm going
to
do.
Yeah, I just did it. I just had to do it.
And that's very Derek-y, man.
Yeah. Well, I need to get it done. You know, I mean, because you've got to haul meat. So actually the unit works awesome driving down the road. I didn't have a defrost timer in it until last week, because when it's just sitting there driving down the road, it's bumped, it's shaking, there's wind. Like, it wasn't an issue. It's just when it was sitting, there was an issue. So as a truck freezer, I didn't even need a defrost timer, and it would get it to like, you know, -1, -3 degrees pretty easy.
Yeah. See, this is one thing that surprised me that the audience should take note of. The window shakers, just, you know, these little window air conditioners that you put in, they can bring it down to freezing.
Oh, yeah. Yep.
You know, but they don't, because they set them to go, 60 or something like 60. That. And, but they can go cold. I did not know that.
Yep.
And I go, well, hell, man, that's all I do. So all of a sudden we got hacks all over the place, mm-hmm. you know, maker botting us of whatever. So you were able, the walls, they're insulated.
So I made them out of freezer panels, the interiors of the walls where you see that aluminum in there. And I got some video and some pictures of this. One of the videos we're going to make is all about this freezer and how you can do your own. So one of the things.
That would be an awesome.
Yeah.
Dang, you should build another one just to show you.
Well, I'm going to build a better one now.
Yeah, hell yeah.
So what I want to, so I'm going to build a better one. And
me and Cypress built our own refrigerated truck.
And I'm gonna basically build it out of a mini split.
Yeah.
You know, they're just, it's time.
They use a lot less power. Yeah. They DC ramp up. You don't have that big hit. You know, Bob's been to me. He's all about his mini split.
Yeah, man. Yeah. For like a $400 mini split, I could build, if I want to spend $700, I could make it really nice. And the other thing, so we'll make a video about this. The one problem with the air conditioners is they're not airtight from the cold side to the warm side. So a lot of my issue is I have warm, moist air. I have moisture getting into the unit through the air conditioners because there's one motor that runs both the fan on the inside that pushes the air through the evaporator and the fan on the outside that pushes the air through the condenser. The condenser is the thing that gets warm. And so there's a shaft that goes through the a styrofoam wall. It's like a half inch of styrofoam, which is fine. It's good insulation. But like, it's a quarter inch shaft, but there's like, you know, a 1 inch hole. And to get to it, it's a little bit of a problem. So what I was going to do was I have another air conditioner at home that I'm going to totally disassemble. And I'm going to see if I can either just take and cut that shaft and eliminate it going through there and just put in a whole nother fan on the evaporator on the inside.
Or put a bearing that will.
Or I was thinking about if I can take the fan off and just put in a bearing that fills the hole, like a roller bearing or something, just so the moisture doesn't come through there. So one of them's got a really tight clearance. That one doesn't ice up quite so good. The other air conditioner on there that's back a little more, the clearance is, you know, you can almost stick like your pinky finger between, you know, where the shaft.
Why would they do that anyway?
It's just cheap.
They just
you've only got a one run motor. It's, you know, it's $99 at Walmart, you know. Okay. So
you make it a $200 with, you know, 15 cents worth of stuff and a knife.
And that's the other thing is, can I buy because you can buy a $350 5,000, you know, BTU air conditioner, but I believe that it doesn't have that single motor. It's got the second motor. And the other thing too is when you're running a freezer is you don't want to pull the air through the through the evaporator. You want to push it through the evaporator, because when you pull it through the cold air, the moisture is really cold and it hits the cold fan and it freezes right on the fan, because whatever doesn't freeze going through the condenser, I mean through the evaporator, hits the fan basically for moisture, and then that's what causes the knocking noise. But with a mini split, I can totally seal the system really nice.
Yeah, because all that crap is separated.
Right, it's all separated.
A mini split, what it is just, you see these little they're like a foot high, maybe 4 feet wide inside the building above the doorway or something, and above a window into the wall. But the air conditioner is outside, you know, and where all the heat is dissipated and so on.
Yeah, condenser and a compressor but outside.
The, one of the big things about them is, you know, they make, you know, instead of having it in one unit and you kind of trying to deal with it, you know, it's separated and you're isolating the two, the hot and the cold. But the big thing on this that I'm finding out is that instead of having the AC motor that you have to build up and it really takes a hit in the amps that it pulls to get it started on the compressor, it's a DC motor and it kind of amps up. I mean, it kind of, you know, it kind of rolls up the speed. So it's not taking that big hit. So you don't need a big giant battery pack or a big inverter or whatever. It just makes it easier for certainly things like on the back of a truck, you know, it just makes it, I don't know why they didn't do it before. You know, it's just,
I didn't have a mini split hanging around. I had a window shaker.
No, I mean, why they didn't start making, I don't know what the technology difference was, but somebody.
Oh yeah. The DC inverter. And cause so from AC to DC is the inverter part. And then you got the DC motor, but yeah, almost everything is running a DC motor nowadays for like that needs a motor because of the inverter technology is just so good now.
Yeah.
So my unit, So that's the other thing too. So right now I'm running a 3,500 watt generator. I got the generator running last night and today. That's the other thing. I tested the voltage. It's like, we got like 94 volts coming in at the campground here. And when my, so I hooked up to the neighbor's site and it was at like 94, 96.
How's anything working?
I mean, but it was, the fans weren't turning fast. So, but when more bunch of people showed up here yesterday and started plugging in, and also I had to run a generator last weekend of Pork Fest because they got warm and a lot of people are running the air conditioning and the voltage in the park is low. You know, this place needs a lot of maintenance. You know, it needs probably some transformers, needs some upgrades. And
oh, yeah, I remember that was, yeah, Derek was talking about it. Was the main box down there was kind of jacked up and he's pounding on it and bang, got going, you know, half of the circuits, a little bit of something. And finally, I guess they changed it and then it fixed it or something.
Well, it ain't fixed. But anyway, so I've had the air conditioner. The thing was only cooling till about 20 degrees on the park power. If I run it on a generator, You know, within 2 hours of it running, I got, you know, the units are shutting off because they're getting down to 10 degrees. When I had it at home, I had it cooling to -3. But I also had it parked in the shade, too, which really helped. So I've been running it on a generator. And in fact, I'm going to have to go check that generator again. I didn't fill it up totally with gas. And it works way better on a generator. It doesn't make that noise quite as often that it was making a rapping. And I don't want to be, like, irritating people here with it. But the truck freezer is cool because I can take it. I can have basically about 2,600 pounds of meat will fit in it if every box is 40 pounds. And and I could pick it up with my forklift from both ends, and I can also use it as a cooler at home. But that's why I'm going to build another one that I want to build. So I have to bring a generator with me when I'm driving this thing around to run all the stuff. With the mini split, I will probably be able to just use a power inverter off my truck to run the mini split.
Well, if you get these lithium iron phosphate batteries are butt simple and cheap and something you need to do anyway, because that gives you a lot more buffer and it's not jacking up your alternator and your inverters or whatever, because you need to have a battery. You need to get, you know, something in there. And, you know, that's like a Derek thing, but, these lithium iron phosphates, I'm ready to buy an upgrade of a bunch of order them and you and I do them at your place, show you how to do it. And I'll add to the bus. Cause I can cheaply, you know, get that out. We might do the ordering at Derek's and then build them at your place to say we did.
Yep. That'd be cool. The, so I, with one air without the defrosters, I can run one air conditioner on a power inverter with my truck. I got a 1500 watt power inverter. That seemed to work okay. But when you're sitting there idling with the truck and instead of your voltage being like, you know, 13.8, 14.1, it's like, you know, the alternator is really hot. Like, I just can't let it idle. I got to, like, you know, put the throttle up just a little bit so the alternator don't melt down or just shut it off. Mm-hmm. So I use a generator. Now they got the two units on it. But what I've been doing, because I've had like so much meat coming in, is I got a couple of chest freezers for free. and I've gotten really good at brazing the copper lines, and I've been replacing dryers, and I took a compressor out of a stand-up unit, and I put it in this chest unit, and I braze all the things in, and I put the valves in so I can check the refrigerant, and I've just been charging them with 134A that I bought by at O'Reilly's or Napa. It's like you'd put in your car, and I vacuum the system, and I didn't realize this, but one of the secrets to brazing refrigerant tubes when you braze things in is to charge the inside of the tube with some kind of
argon or something.
Inert gas. Well, yeah, the refrigeration guys use nitrogen. I have argon, so that's just what I use. It works just fine. Because
you got, welding stuff, so so it doesn't jack. I guess you need an inert gas so it doesn't react with the blah, blah, blah.
Well, what it does is when you solder in the dryer, which is the very last element so inside your refrigerant, if you get any moisture in there, it screws the system up. It'll just freeze, and it won't work. It'll block it off. So the dryer is right before the refrigerant. The dryer filter is right before the refrigerant goes through the capillary tube, which is this little itty bitty tube that, you can put a hair follicle through, and that's how it does the pressure differential. The way refrigerant works is you compress it, and then it goes through the condenser, which cools it back down because you compress it, it gets hot, so that releases the heat, and then it goes through a capillary tube. And so it's like 250, 300 psi. The refrigerant on the hot side, high side of the unit, goes through about, I don't know, 3 or 4 foot of capillary tube. They got it all wound up in there. And then it comes out, and on cars use what's called an expansion valve. But on a lot of the refrigerated units, the expansion valve is capillary tube. So on the other side, it's 100 PSI of pressure. And now it's a gas. And when that air expands, that gas expands, it absorbs heat. And because in refrigeration, you don't cool things down. You just move heat from one spot to another. You can heat things up. You can't cool them down, or you can remove things from heat. So, but that all has to be dry. So when you heat copper up hot enough to braise, there's copper oxides that are created, and these oxides will plug up the dryer because they become solid material.
And it's so small that will jack it up.
Yeah. So when you put argon or nitrogen gas in the line, it there's no oxygen in there. It removes the oxygen, and now you don't have this oxygen reacting with your almost molten copper that you're brazing.
An oxide, a rust, a film, a whatever the hell it would do. That's a good idea. So
one of these kids that's in the community is actually going to come and he's going to practice brazing copper pipe. Not solder. We're going to braze it. Braze is way stronger. And
well, you have to use, gas acetylene to do that, right?
Yeah, you're not going to braze copper pipe with just propane. You can. It just takes a really long time. And you need to be hot and quick and fast because there's just other stuff in there. You don't want it to get hot. If you spend a lot of time putting the heat to it, the heat has time to travel and get it and hurt things.
Well, that's one thing you do is that you have various different kinds of welding.
Yep.
So we learned a lot of different stuff, different kinds of welding. Like when Luke and I were working on the chicken tractor we were building, we got to practice a bunch of different stuff and what this stuff and the plasma cutter and everything. Yep. I mean, plasma cutters. Ooh,
yeah, that's
plasma cutter fan, man.
Yes. You need a plasma cutter if you're going to be doing do it yourself projects.
And for $200 from Harbor Freight, those things work awesome.
They do. And the thing is 20 years ago, you couldn't.
That didn't even exist.
You had to spend $3,000 on a plasma cutter 20 years ago.
Hell, I didn't even know they had them.
Yeah, they didn't exist until 20 years ago.
Yeah. This is, wrap this up. What do you think's New Hampshire? Is it, the people that are here, the people that came? Is it Free State projects producing them? Just it's kind of the culture here. The future is going to be, because they're going to try and turn the success of this year into the, whatever the hell they're going to do, And I'm wondering, I don't really care. I'm more worried about what you're doing, people being able to survive this thing. It's not going to be let's go vote thing. I mean, that might be a side effect, but that's not the primary mission here,
There's a lot of people doing what I'm doing. Like I was getting into, I digressed on a bunch of other stuff. I meant to talk a little bit about what I just did here this week. But there's a lot of people, like I said, that are raising pigs, that are raising chickens, that are fixing their own equipment. And the rural...
Building their own houses.
Building their own... Rural New Hampshire is... you know, you're pretty rugged. Rural New Hampshire people, who especially New Hampshire natives that have been here for a while, you know, they, it's customary. You just, of course, you're going to buy two or three piglets every spring. Of course, you're going to buy 50 meat birds every year. And of course, you're going to plant a garden. Why the hell wouldn't you do that stuff? It's the city, it, you know, hipsters and yuppies that, you know, buy the really sweet, you know, condos out in the country that, you know, are the ones that are going to, or living in a city, are the ones that are going to.
They think Saturday morning, they get up early, they take a nice little antiquing, go around hike, and on the way home, they'll stop by the farmer's market and buy some vegetables, and they think they're all organic and
that's cool. I love selling those guys meat. I sell a lot of those guys meat. But
they need to at least learn how. Right. See, when we were in Phoenix, you've been to our place. You know, it's
I've actually never been to your place.
I thought you were.
No, I've just been in Jackalope. And,
a lot of guys came down after Jackalope, but it's a couple of acres and just, you know, and irrigated, you know, it's green because you add water. And what we had done is we did chickens, turkeys, goats, fish, aquaponics, you know, making geodesic domes. A lot of the stuff that we did was not so much for there.
Mm-hmm.
It was for when we were ready to move to, you know, outside the city or something like this, or in the desert or something. We had to convince ourselves and the audience, you know, that you could do it. We could, you know, gone, Jay. I mean, you know, and so this is, I'm really looking forward to seeing what you can share and the stuff, and kids will grow up, and Cypress will, you know, freaking have her own freaking channel. She doesn't have her own channel by 12. She's doing it wrong, you know, but the politics here and stuff, that's cool. That's kind of a side effect of this. I'm just not that interested. I don't mind being attention, helping Carla do whatever, but I'm not dependent on somebody else's vote. I'm not digging that, you know. It's much better, the example of what you're doing. So we're going to help make sure you get to have a voice because they need it.
Thank you.
Yeah. Anything else? Is there a special webpage you want people to go to and see something?
Well, jnoon.com hasn't been really populated yet. You know, Derek's got
JAYNOONE. jnoon.com has been sitting there
for like 4 waiting years.
On this.
Yes, yes.
This has been a plan for us for like freaking ever.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, you're so busy and you're so kitted up and you're so got another kid and you got another son coming in September. We got to do it now. We won't get no Jay.
Right.
All right. We're looking forward to it. Peace, brother. JNoon.com.